It's the Infinite Podcast. Go tell your friends. It's the Infinite Podcast. My God, it never ends. It's the Infinite Podcast with Rob and Corey the Q.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Project Infinite podcast, the podcast covering the infinite and ever-expanding multiverse of fandom from movies, comics, TV shows, video games. We've got you covered. I'm Rob. I'm here, as always, with Court. Court, are you ready for our Quantum episode?
Yeah. You can't just put Quantum in front of everything, but I'm ready.
Yeah, I absolutely can put Quantum in front of everything, and will. This is going to be the Quantum podcast. The Project Quantum podcast now. But no, we are here to talk about Ant-Man Quantumania and the kind of previewing that since it does come out this week. Mm-hmm. It's finally here.
Yeah, finally here.
We're finally going to see the proper introduction of Jonathan Majors as Kang the Conqueror. We obviously saw him already in Loki as He Who Remains.
But you mean that's the same guy?
It's the same guy. Oh, same guy. So we're going to talk about that.
First fresh start to Phase 5.
Yeah. Yeah, first film of Phase 5, which is exciting. Mm-hmm. We talked about Phase 4 last week and all the cool things that it gave us. So Phase 5 is, we're getting into the, I guess we're like ramping up. This is like the rising action, mm-hmm. I guess, of like the next phase, of the next like group of Marvel movies, the next couple phases. Right. This is going to be like the rising phase, mm-hmm. because we're getting into Kang, we're getting into a bunch of other stuff. We're revisiting the cosmic side of the Marvel Universe, mm-hmm. with the Marvels and Guardians 3. Yep. So
reforming the Avengers on Earth.
Yep.
And possibly getting a darker version of those Avengers with the Thunderbolts. So, and then going back to the street level with Daredevil. He's back. She-Hulk's there. Spider-Man's back. So now this phase is going to be all about putting the pieces into place. So by the time Phase 6 starts, it's almost like Phase 4 did that for Phase 5, huh?
Yeah.
Interesting how that works.
Interesting how that works, right? And then also we have the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. took place, or as we like to call it, movie trailer time.
There was a football game at that Rihanna concert.
There was a football game. There was a Rihanna concert, but all we care about is the trailers. So we got some.
I was right. My pick was right.
What pick?
I picked the Chiefs.
Oh, nice. Me too.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
Yeah. Chiefs. I almost had the score, too. Dang it.
I had the 3-point differential in the game. I just had it lower than that.
But so did I think.
And then I realized that Patrick Mahomes was playing. I said, this score might be a little higher.
I think I said 34-31 when I guessed it.
Was that pass interference?
Yeah. I mean, if the guy admits it.
It's pass interference in week 5.
Yeah.
Maybe not in a Super Bowl.
It's a tough way to go, but
it is a tough way to go.
It feels like, you know, it felt inevitable. The Chiefs were on their Thanos flow.
I was literally going to say the same thing. Patrick Mahomes pulled up. Y'all must have forgot who I was.
Destiny arrives. Mm-hmm. Or should I say Patrick Mahomes has.
You know what Patrick Mahomes did in that game? His ankle was so bad, he pulled like a Thanos when the axe went through his chest. And he's just like, you should have gone for the ankle. And then he just proceeded to win a Super Bowl.
You should have gone for the legs.
And then Jalen Hurts is there like, what did you do?
Jalen Hurts was cooking.
Yeah, he was. What's he cooking?
All right. That's enough sports talk. Nerd. Sports are for nerds.
Yeah, sports are for nerds.
Let's just get back to this movie podcast. Yeah. This movie and comic podcast, because sports are for nerds. But before we get into the news, obviously, as always, we have to talk about The Last of Us. Because the show is continues to be great. I don't know what else there needs to be said at this point. Episode 5, Endure and Survive, obviously one of the most famous taglines of the game, makes its way into the episode title. And this was the Henry and Sam episode.
Yes.
Henry and Sam episode. Yep.
You know, oftentimes when we talk about like mediums, you know, sometimes you want a deeper meaning, sometimes you want to turn your brain off. I think this is the perfect example of, you know, why the first one works so well and why we connect to that. I mean, the show is like prophetic and poetic. Like, this show is very, it does a great job of understanding, you know, much how the game does. It does this great job of like understanding this sucks. Like, this situation is the worst situation you can ever ask for. But again, I say it every week, there's the smallest sliver of hope every week that keeps you coming back. Like, all right, we might be able to make it out of this. And I mean, that comes way of Henry and Sam, two characters that we got introduced to last week. And man, the changes that they made and this idea that, you know, Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann agreed upon to make Sam deaf made like the complete difference. And, you know, bringing in an actual deaf actor to do this as well, you have to operate differently. And I mean, I could just tell that set is like a great set to be on. And I think Craig Mazin has the same rule that Olivia Wilde has of like, there's no like, nobody's going to be mean to each other on set. Like we're going to have, it's going to be a great time. But, you could tell like the energy, like that he just infected amongst everybody else around them was just so endearing and so great. The relationships are what makes this show. And this week it's just great. One of the big changes is making them younger. And I think it's, you can tell that and it's funny, like it hit a lot more for Henry than it did for Sam. Cause you know, front face, you would have been like, all right, Sam's younger. It was more Henry that really got me. Cause like, man, this is tough. Like he really is like, he feels like he's like, he can't be older than like 22. Like he does not feel old at all. Like Henry genuinely feels like he's also like a child that was like when he was like, you know, obviously he's older. He might be as old as this thing is, like as old as this, you know, as this zombie or this infected universe is. So having a lit, like he grew up with this entire thing. And then he had a brother in this entire thing too. Is like, it's gotta be so much tougher. And I mean, just the changes and like more fleshing out your characters. I mean, talking about like him, I'm not a violent person. Like me holding an empty gun was the most violent. And then the decision he has to make, it's just like, that's why it's so poetic. And it's just, it sucks and it hurts every time.
Yeah, man. That realization that you have, that you don't even have in the moment. Like when he shoots and kills Sam, that's the first time he's ever killed somebody.
Fired like, a gun. Like,
he's, I know like he's, yeah. He, you know, he made the mention that he killed quote unquote Kathleen's brother, like by, condemning him to death, basically. Mm-hmm. But the first time he ever actually shot and killed somebody was the one person he was living to protect. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just an unfathomable amount of pain and trauma. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I mean, the two key decisions that they made in particular with Sam was aging him down in the game. He's, like, Ellie's age, so he's around, you know, 12, 13.
Yeah, I think he says, like, I'm turning 13. He's just like, I'm 13. He's like, you're turning 13. You're not 13 yet.
So aging him down to 8 really changes the dynamic between Sam and Ellie in the show. In the show, she takes on this real, like, big sister kind of role. Oh, like, my gosh. Immediately.
They're so incredible together. Their chemistry is just, it's electric, you know, the way they feel with each other. It's just, you can tell that this world is really a commentary on, like, you know, not only on relationships, but on, like, you know, the protection of people. And I mean, that's the whole point of episode 3 is for that. And you see it here. And it, again, this is Joel's second reflection of what's happening. Like, he got the first one with Bill. Now he gets the second one with Henry. It's just like, then Henry says the line to him, like, I know you had, even though that's, I know you had a child before this. Like, I know you did, just the way you look at her, just the way you, like, you look after her, protect her. Like, you've had somebody before her. And you know what Joel gets from this episode is like, I can't lose her now. Like I, oh crap. Like the thing I told myself I was never going to have, it happened again by looking at these two and seeing how far they would go, how far Henry would go for Sam.
Yeah. And, just a really great 2-episode kind of villain, yeah, in the form of Kathleen. Like, you know, in the beginning, like when you first meet her, like you think she's just like, you know, Apocalypse Karen. Like, mm-hmm. She asked to speak to the manager of the QZ and she took it over.
Yeah, she did.
But what you find out and why she's hunting Henry is because her brother was like the real leader of this revolutionary movement in, mm-hmm, Kansas City, and Henry turned him over to Fedra, got him executed. So, you know, it's really great in the sense that, like, you understand why Henry did what he did, but, mm-hmm, you also understand why Kathleen is the way that she is, yeah, because, you know, to her, Michael was her Sam. Like, yeah, that was her brother.
Yeah. You know, she was like Sam to his Henry, but like even going further, like they set it up in universe that Michael was like this messianic figure to that town. He was just like this great man that, like, you know, led them almost like in the Last of Us 2 game. I forget what her name was, but in Seattle, what that figurehead was like. Like, and you got to think, in times like this, people like that probably would start to arise. But you know what's funny? Perry makes a great point, played by the Tommy actor Jeffrey from the Pierce, game. Yeah. But Perry makes a great point. Like, we loved Michael. Like, he was this great human being. Like, he was the best of us, but, like, he didn't do much. Like, look what you've done in the last week, what he hasn't been able to do in the last 20 years. Like, there's a reason, like, why, you know, as bad as you might feel, like, we need you, Kathleen. Like, you're the one that helped us overthrow Fedra.
Yeah.
But sometimes you turn into your oppressors after you overthrow them, and that was the case.
Yeah, it was exactly the case. Leads to a great hunt, little tense, little walk through the sewers, mm-hmm. and then we get to the suburbs, and mm-hmm. Just one of the best infected kind of sequences
ever in anything.
Yeah, maybe. It's real World War Z mm-hmm. stuff, and it's all for the most part it's all practical.
Yeah,
just some really chilling, unsettling moments in that sequence, obviously spearheaded by the bloater, mm-hmm. Which was practical also, which is kind of crazy to consider that was just a guy in an 80-pound suit aided with some CGI right. and stuff. Really, really incredible. The show continues to hit high bars across every type of metric, whether it's visuals, whether it's camera work, whether it's character work, whether it's dialogue. This show is just firing on every cylinder.
Yeah. I want to talk about that. So that happens. They run, and it's a great play on the game, you know, that sniper section in the game. It's a great kind of twist to that, and it's prolonged too, which I think is pretty cool. So instead of it's just infected chasing after Sam, Ellie, and Henry, it switched to Joel's like, this guy is a horrible sniper. I can go just take that over, which I think is great for the game, because in the game, he's like egging you on in the game, which is interesting.
And it's just some old man.
It's just an old guy. Like,
which kind of leans, you know, to the kind of crappiness of the world.
Exactly. It's just like these people, like in the game, like, again, that I keep going back to that line that Mazin had about death being trivial. Like, it's also the world, like a video game world being, you know, trivial. Like, it's very, like, in a video game, they're just NPCs. Like, these are actual people. Like, they're, like, people that are down, like, horrendously on their luck because they just happen to be alive during this time. Like, that's just an old man that just is following orders, essentially. Like, he shouldn't be in that situation ever, but he has to be because this is the survival. It's endure and survive now. So, obviously, Joel takes over the sniper tower, and then Joel's there, he's looking out, and, you know, Kathleen pulls up with the crew, and, man,
that big bulldozer.
The big bulldozer that says run from the game, but what's so incredible is, like, the line she gives Henry, like, kids die all the time, like...
And your brother wasn't even supposed to live.
Exactly, like, my brother was supposed to live and lead us, like, your brother, like, should have died before this, and, like, now he's, like, what's a kid's death mean, like, and... It's the whole thing about Joel and Ellie's relationship in the story. Like, it means everything. Like, I would kill this entire town for Sam, essentially, Henry. By Henry's silence, that's what he's saying. I'll kill this whole town. I'll kill anybody. Like, I will choose violence if I need to. Like, if it's to protect Sam, I'll do anything I need to.
So, yeah, it's insane.
That sequence is, oh, man. Man, oh, man, yeah, that... They just run out, like you said, that World War Z type of just running out of the ground.
The camera's real close.
Yeah.
So that it feels very, like, overwhelming, like, mm-hmm. in the moment, like, when they all shoot out of there.
They do a good job about understanding anarchy and chaos to the point where it's, like, controllable, if that makes sense. Like, it's not too overwhelming, but it is. It's, like, sensory overload. Like, it's so much to take in because, like, you look one way in the screen, you look another way. Like, people are just being attacked. Like, the choreography also is really incredible.
And it goes back to what I said, you know, going back to episode 2, where where I said with the clickers, like, they're going to make all of these infected encounters feel special mm-hmm. instead of making them feel trivial like The Walking Dead does or like Last of Us, even the game does,
yeah.
where they're just encounters. But episode 2, they really wanted the horror and suspense of that clicker encounter to feel special. Mm-hmm. And then in this is your big zombie outbreak infected, you know, mob scene. Yeah.
We're halfway through the show, so
yeah.
needed that.
And, you know, and then the bloater, like, I don't know if this will be the last time we see a bloater. I think maybe they just put this in to show you how dangerous these things are. Yeah. And then maybe we get another one down the road that Joel has to kind of deal with. You know, so, you know. And then, obviously, the ending is just...
Yeah. So, I want to... The big... And it's because, I mean, obviously, if you played the game, you know what happens. But I want to talk about the other part of the ending. The Henry and... Or the Sam and Ellie scene. Because I think that's the... That might be one of the best scenes on this show, period. Like, you're taking the two youngest, or outside of Sarah's actor, you're taking the two youngest characters in the show, and like, you're putting a lot on their shoulders in terms of like having to pull emotional weight.
And Sam's deaf.
And so, yeah, Sam's deaf on top, but it's Ellie's acclimation, and it's like, it's the same thing that Joel has. Like, she's not only picking up on like the things that Joel does physically, she's picking up like, I also can be a protector too. Like, this is what I have, you know.
And it's a great mirror for the conversation that Joel and Henry are having in the other room, where Joel's like, man, it must be great to be a kid, like, in this universe, or like in this world. And Henry's like, what? Like, how is it good to be a kid? And Joel's like, because no one relies on you. Mm-hmm. Conversely, in the other room, you have Ellie, who is taking it upon herself to try and help Sam.
Yeah, help Sam, give him some solace, give him some calm, you know, because, man, the decision, see, we talk about decision switches and adaptations, because most times, you know, people will be like, would you change? Because you're watching the same exact thing. If you don't change anything, it doesn't make any sense. So
this is a great change from the game.
So the big change is that Sam shows Ellie that he's infected, and she's, oh man. She immediately is just like, everything's going to be okay. Like, everything will be like, I have magic blood, and I'm going to, all I got to do is, and it, like, the little acting choices that they have, like, they're just, it's so good. Her reading the comic and like, you see Sam start to lose, like, not less and less of his consciousness, but like, less hope and less hope and less hope. And Ellie, like, she's this beacon of hope for this show, for this story.
Yeah, it's a really great change from the game, because in the game, they have the same conversation about fears, and Ellie accidentally kind of gives Sam no hope, like, at all, because he asks her the question about, like, these things, like, are the people still in there? And she just says no, like, they're gone. Mm-hmm. And in the game, Sam doesn't show her the bite, so like, the parting kind of thing that he gets is like, I'm gonna turn into a monster. Mm-hmm. And it's very bleak.
Yeah.
So the show, even though it's bleak, still, at least those two characters, like, Sam does kind of end on a higher note, like, with him showing her the bite and her trying to save him. And for Ellie, it's this opportunity to be the hero that Marlene and the Fireflies believe that she is, and she fails.
Yeah, because it doesn't work like that. And you know what's great? And I don't love when people do this, when one thing has to either be better or worse than the other. Like, I don't enjoy them, but I, like, both are great, because what the game version of this does is, like, Ellie doesn't know, and, like, Sam has to live, like, the last couple hours of his life, like, alone. And what does Ellie say? Like, what's your biggest fear? Like, my biggest fear is ending up alone. Like, and Sam has to live the last part of his life alone. Like, he has to, and it's this kid, it's this play on innocence. But the show, it's just, like, it prolongs that a little bit, but also it gives you that little sliver of hope. Like, hey, for people that haven't played the game, this actually might work. Like, this actually might be a thing that happens. And it's also subverting expectations, because a little piece of me, having played the game, was also like, maybe Sam's also the same way that Ellie is. Maybe there might be something, like, for people around that age where it just might not work. But, and you think about it, but then, you know, the inevitability of the realism of the world is, like, people die. People die all the time.
Kathleen was right. Mm-hmm. You know, kids do die. And Sam turns and they have that really tense standoff between Joel and Henry, where Sam is attacking Ellie and Joel obviously trying to save her. And Henry's like shoots at the ground because he doesn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. He's panicking. And then he just makes that snap decision to kill his brother.
Mm-hmm. He's protecting Ellie essentially. And like, he has, you know, even in through that little moment of clarity, he's just like, all right, the self-preservation is going to take over. And then that decision, it's just so snap, but it's the only thing that he had. It's the only thing. And he sees Joel and Ellie, and he sees like this hope that like, hey, like I can't, maybe I don't turn into like the killer that Joel is, but there is a chance I could protect Sam through this whole thing, and I can get him through this whole thing. And it's just not the case. And then obviously what happens next is Henry can't live with this decision. And he takes his own life, and it's just, again, like, it just, I'm still torn because, like, a little part of me wanted the episode to end. Like, there's something to me about the game, like, it just ends. Like, it just cuts to black, and you just have to sit there. You have to sit there with this decision, and then it jumps to the spring, and you're like, we don't know how they reacted to any of these things, but again, neither's better or worse, in my opinion. Like, what the show does is it goes immediately to, like, Ellie loses a lot of her innocence through there. She's like, which, after they bury them, like, Sam wrote "I'm sorry," right? It was Sam that wrote it.
I think Ellie wrote it
to him.
To him. To Sam. Yeah. Right? Like, because she was convinced that she could help him. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yep.
And then, I mean, that reaction that Bella Ramsey gives, that like guttural reaction when Henry kills himself, mm-hmm. it's traumatic.
Yeah, she's killing it as Ellie. She truthfully is.
And then you see that. Yeah, after Henry and Sam's deaths, you see that switch flip in her, where, like, let's go. Like,
which way is west?
Yeah.
And that's it. But the biggest piece for, you know, for Joel, because I know we didn't talk about him a lot, was he looks at Ellie, and he's just like, I can't allow this to happen. Like, I'm fond of this girl at this point. Like, I cannot by any circumstance lose her. And I mean, no spoilers, but that's what gears up for the end of this season. So
yeah. And just wonderful job.
Yeah.
And can't wait to see what next week
yep.
brings. We're obviously going to see the reunion of Joel and Tommy.
Yeah.
So Gabriel yep. Luna will be back.
Yep. And I want to emphasize, like, you know, storytelling and pulling parallels, like how that's probably, because even the hug from the trailer for next week feels so much more like organic and so much more, you know, propped up, because I feel like Joel genuinely is just like, I just lost two brothers, lose each other, like, and two brothers that were keeping each other safe, and Henry keeping Sam safe. Like, I know I lost you throughout this whole thing, but like, they reminded me a lot of me and you too. So I think that they're gonna play into that next week, and like, you know, that traumatic experience that they just went through.
Yeah, just can't say enough good things about this show. But we do have some news, so let's talk about some news. So Deadpool 3 is starting to ramp up, mm-hmm. starting to get into shape, and we have a villain casting. So Emma Corrin from The Crown.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. She is cast as the villain in Deadpool 3. What that means, who knows, because this movie is going to be bananas.
Yeah, yep, I do think this movie might be everything that people wanted Doctor Strange to be, because now you can actually, I mean, obviously Doctor Strange pulled characters from other universes, but I think this one's going to be like that X-Men universe that we all grew up with. I think that's exactly what it is. So, yeah. I have this theory that she's going to play Lady Deadpool.
I thought that too.
I don't know why enough. I felt that, but I think that would be pretty interesting. The only other things that I was just thinking about last night was like, I don't know if they try to pull like a Shi'ar type of thing, but they already kind of did that in Dark Phoenix, because I guarantee you the Shi'ar would probably not be cool with the universes starting to collide with each other, even though Earth's like the waypoint. So they might pull a little bit from Infinity with Thanos, you know, that Thanos storyline where like Thanos comes to Earth while all the Avengers go out to fight in the Shi'ar war. But why is this going off?
Not this guy getting a phone call right now.
It's my AirTag keeps going off. That's annoying. Hopefully
that's
you can
We're leaving it in.
John Watts. What was I talking about? The Shi'ar Empire? I was saying a whole bunch of non-nerd stuff, because sports are nerdy.
Sports are for nerds.
Yeah, sports are for nerds. This is real stuff. But yeah, I was thinking either Lady Deadpool. I think that would be kind of a fun, like, Ryan Reynolds would have to have the antithesis of himself to fight. The only thing that would have made that better if it was Blake Lively was playing Lady Deadpool, but,
yeah.
You know, beggars can't be choosers. But maybe the only other things I can think about is maybe something to do with the weapon program. But I just feel like if this movie is going to have to deal with the multiverse, like, what better way to do this than have it be a different version of Deadpool
for himself? Yeah, I think that makes total sense for this being like a multiversal travel movie to have, you know, do the thing that we expected Loki to be, like have the variant of Deadpool be the villain in the end. Like, mm-hmm. I think that would be fun. Like, this movie, you know, this movie is legitimately going to be no harm, no foul,
mm-hmm.
just fun. Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds just romping about.
You saw Hugh Jackman look significant. I mean, even from when he was playing Prime Wolverine, he looks significantly bigger than what he was.
I think they want him to look comic booky.
I think they want him to have the no sleeves suit. like helmet. So yeah. He's just like, yeah.
I think so too. I think that's what we're gearing towards. Mm-hmm. Like, this movie's just going to be wacky. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to be wacky and it's going to be fun. And I can't wait. It's going to be great. So Spider-Man, the Spider-Man verse is ever expanding, as we've talked about with these movies.
They're copying us.
They are copying us. But Amazon has ordered a Spider-Man noir TV series mm-hmm. for Amazon. I guess that would make sense why Spider-Man Noir is not returning for mm-hmm. for Across the Spider-Verse, because they're going to use the character for a different thing. And this is going to be live action?
Yes. Yep.
Interesting. That's fun.
I think it's going to be kind of cool. It could be almost just like this 1930s.
Like a Dick Tracy-esque.
Exactly.
Yep. Like a detective series.
Right. Just with Spider-Man in New York and like, just, you know, make it black and white. Like, I hope they don't change
that. It has to be in black and white.
If they don't make it in black and white, I'm going to lose it.
But, it has to be in black and white.
Yeah. I think this could be pretty cool. I think you could make, and also because it's on Amazon too, is a big decision, because now you can make this much darker than what you were going for as well. So
darker do you want it to be? It's already in black and white.
Yeah. What if they just get Nicolas Cage again?
I thought about it, and it could work.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you would do in that situation is you do it like a detective noir. You have him narrating.
Mm-hmm.
He never takes off the mask. He's just Spider-Man noir all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you just do that. You just do it like that. That's how I would do it. And I think it would be fun. I think it would be really great.
Yeah.
I don't know if he would do it, but I think that would be great.
Right.
Like, you do, like, you know, Sunday, you know, whatever, like, however the Batman starts, mm-hmm. you just do that, but do it for the whole thing.
Yeah.
I think that could be really cool.
It's just like Sunday, July 4th, the cracks from the fire are exploding in the skyline.
And it's all in black and white.
Yep.
Like, it's just fire, you pan up, fireworks, but they're in black and white.
Oh my God. Can we just make this show? I think we'll just submit this piece of the episode, and we'll have it. We'll send it to them, and then we're going to be able to write and direct this.
Yeah. So I think that could be. They could do a lot of cool things with this.
They need to keep the Nirvana song.
Yeah. There's a couple. Look, we're fine with adaptations, but this you absolutely have to do.
Oh yeah.
A certain way.
Yeah. Hey, we're not taking no for an answer.
No.
We're like those Snyder fans on Twitter right now that are like,
what is that? What is happening?
You gotta touch grass once in a while.
Oh my God, let it go. It's over. It's over. It's over, Snyderverse. We have the high ground.
You underestimate my power.
Man, oh man. So before we talk about the trailers from the Super Bowl, we have some Disney news that was a little unexpected. So
it's only unexpected for one of them, for you. I think it's I was like, okay, this makes sense, but
so Toy Story, Frozen, and Zootopia.
Why are you throwing Zootopia? Why are you throwing shots at Zootopia?
It's just interesting. When I think pillars of Pixar, I don't think Zootopia.
I think Zootopia has a strong claim in the last 5 years. When did that movie come out? Like 7 years ago or something like that,
yeah.
I think it has a pretty strong claim in the modern piece of where Disney animation is.
Yeah, it's just Toy Story, Frozen, and then Zootopia. It's
Frozen's like only famous because of the song.
It's so. Like the dragon, the three-headed dragon.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
So Toy Story 5, Frozen 3, and then a Zootopia sequel are happening. Two of those things I don't think are necessary, being Toy Story 5 sure. and Frozen 3. I don't think Frozen 2 was all that necessary, but you had to make it because the first one made $1 billion mm-hmm. and the song was like the biggest song ever.
Yep.
So, but Toy Story 5 is kind of puzzling, to be honest. I feel like 3 probably should have been where it ended in the first place. And then they did 4 and 4 was fine. And now we're doing 5. So
I'm going to leave it at one thing. Money. That's it.
Yeah.
That's either. I don't think there's any rhyme or reason. Like, it's just money. I do think something's happening. I don't know how to explain this, but like, why do I feel like this is going to sound just absolutely absurd, but like, why do I feel like Disney's struggling with money a little bit?
Whoa. Explain yourself.
I mean, what did they just do? They just laid off how many employees?
True.
When Bob Iger took over. They're ramping down the amount of projects from your biggest franchise, from the MCU that's pulling you your most money in terms of your, like, your content side. and then you're going to the well for animation, so, you know, a big piece for, like, kids and families. You're going to the well on, you know, like you said, two out of the three things, in my opinion, three things that are, like, you know, big IPs, like... All these decisions feel very, like, we might need some extra influx in the bank account, which is, like I said, like, see, I don't want to get killed for this, because, but, like, genuinely, like, something feels weird about this, that the fact that, like, all those things are happening all at once, and I'm like, I thought you guys had, like, money, like, I thought you guys were, like, the big money makers, like, didn't need to second guess, and I think we're gonna talk about it for the Flash trailer, like, and, like, where Warner Brothers is right now, like... I didn't know this was a problem. Like, I genuinely didn't think this was a problem, but...
What are you guys doing with all your money?
Yeah, where's it going? It's going to Avengers Secret Wars.
It's going to the Avengers Square Enix video game.
That's where all the money went? Oh, no.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting point about it. It just... Honestly, the Marvel stuff kind of feels like stuff that we talked about for a while that we both felt like needed to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, pump the brakes a little bit. Space your stuff out and really put some time into it instead of just pumping out content for days. Just take it easy a little bit. So I think on the Marvel side, that's kind of more what it is. But yeah, I mean, on the actual Disney animated side, interesting that they didn't go to live action gritty Toy Story reboot, which they could have done. We're not just toys, Andy. Oh no, Kevin Costner, what are you doing here?
Why Kevin Costner was the first pull that you made?
I don't know.
Kevin Costner, Jeff Bridges.
Kevin Costner is Woody.
Oh, Jeff Bridges is Buzz? I think we're on to something.
Sid built this toy in a cave with a box of scraps.
Pacino is, what was the bear from the third one?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. De Niro is Mr. Potato Head. Don't let me go down a rabbit hole. This would be crazy.
Save it. We'll make this a topic for the next.
What a random topic to have, but it'd be great.
Casting of live action Toy Story,
or just gritty reboots of stuff. Wait for a Tiny Tim reboot. We've been working on that one for legitimately 7 years. We've been working.
Yeah,
on
we have.
We're gonna make a billion. We're gonna pull the Joker for that universe.
Tiny. Or Tim?
Oh, it's got to be Tim. Like, they're going to do, like, what Lanterns does. Like, I thought they were going to call Booster Gold, and then I was going to really lose it. But, yeah, Tim.
Tim. All right. Super Bowl. Trailers. Mm-hmm. We got
Four and a half big trailers.
Because the first one we're going to talk about is the Transformers trailer. It wasn't a trailer. It was a 30-second spot for Porsche, I think, was actually what it was. Yep. I think that movie's going to be all right.
Yeah, it's just pulling from the Bumblebee mold of understanding that the Transformers are Transformers.
They're characters in their own right.
They're characters, yep. They're beings. They're not just, you know, cool shots of cars, Michael Bay. Yep. And then...
Colorful.
And B, have some fun. Like, let's have some... Like, again, I think we'll probably do it by the time we get to... Rise of the Beast, we'll do like a Transformers retrospective, but like I think you agree with me, the first five Transformer movies are like, I thought about it because these movies were coming out like when I was a kid, and then like I was like, these movies feel like satires, like they don't feel like real movies sometimes, like
no,
there's fun bits, but like they feel just like really weird, like to the point of being like borderline American Pie movies sometimes, like they feel they just feel off a little bit. So yeah, just have some fun, like for lack of a better term, I think that's the best way to go about it. Like, and I think that's what this new age of Transformers are. It's understanding that the Transformers are Transformers. Like, we're not coming for the human characters. Nobody cares. Like, give us more Transformers.
Yeah, I agree. I think this movie is going to be fun. We will think quite highly of Bumblebee because it does what the promise of the Transformers movies was supposed to be, which is this movie's about Transformers and they're going to be transforming and it's going to make sense, which I really appreciate. So I'm looking forward to that. We got another trailer for Indiana Jones 5, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. And this movie looks, speaking of fun, this movie looks real, real fun.
Yeah, I'm real excited and I'm real high on this movie. I mean, again, this is that thing where I think people need to look beyond, like, a franchise coming back. I think it's a little bit deeper than that. I think it's more of like, what's your personnel looking like? Like, bringing back a franchise and getting like Michael Bay versus bringing back a franchise and getting James Mangold, they're going to look they're going to be two completely different things. So like, James Mangold's helming this, like, that's 1A. 1B is like, it's something that's crazy to say, but like, Harrison Ford actually looks kind of happy to be there. Like, he doesn't look like he doesn't look like he's phoning it in, which is huge when you're bringing these characters back. So that's super important. I mean, that's like, you know, going to the Andrew Garfield school of doing it. Like, you can have a character come back and, you know, it doesn't feel organic or real, but, and then you have like somebody like Andrew Garfield coming back of like, hey, like, I'm here and I'm going to have fun while doing this. So
yeah, it looks great. I think like you said, you can tell Ford is really putting his all into this, mm-hmm. into this movie. And, yep. you know, I think the trailer shows that. It's got all the great Indiana Jones beats that you'd expect. There's a lot of action, a lot of, you know, kind of subverting expectation kind of action sequences, especially when you get to the bit where he's whipping the whip across the mm-hmm. table and the guys just pull out a bunch of guns and he's just like, oh. Yep. So, you know, it's captures the spirit of the character, captures the spirit of Indiana Jones. And I think that's all you can ask for ultimately is when you bring back a franchise like this, you know, does it do something new, but also does it capture the spirit of what it's bringing back? And I think this feels like it's going to.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is. Yeah, it is capturing that feel on that, like, the idea of mystery and wonder that Indiana Jones kind of revolutionized in the early 80s. I think this is, you know, doubling down and going to the Logan school of your last installment in a just let James Bang, if you need to finish a franchise up, like, whenever Henry Cavill gets this Superman movie in 15 years to finish it up, you're going to call James Mangold. That's his bag. Let him keep doing it.
Yeah. Or you can do what the next trailer is doing.
What a transition that was.
Speaking of ending your franchises in just the most, I don't know, insane way possible, we got the first official trailer for Fast 10. Man. When I tell you, I cannot wait. For those of you who have been listening to this podcast since episode 1, you know the absolute fondness and reverence that the Fast and Furious franchise has over this podcast.
I don't think people understand. It's not the fact that we think these movies are good. That's not the point. These movies are insanity. That's the point. They're like watching animes at this point. That's what this franchise
is. It's anime with cars. It's fantastic. This franchise strikes the perfect balance between like pretending to be serious, mm-hmm. but also absolutely realizing what it is.
Yep.
Like when you watch this trailer with like the dramatic music and the shots of like Vin Diesel looking like concerned about mm-hmm. a thing, and then you just juxtapose that with him pulling two helicopters out of the sky with his Dodge Charger and they crash into each other. It's perfect.
Yep.
Where's Homelander? It's perfect.
Yep.
I told you before, Jason Momoa was built to be a Fast and Furious villain.
Oh my god, yeah.
he's just, and they did the thing that they did with Jason Statham with Han's character with Tokyo Drift, mm-hmm. where they retroactively inserted their villain into one of their previous yep. movies. They did that again. Jason Momoa was in Fast 5 the whole time.
Yeah, I guess he was the son of the guy that they stole from in Fast 5.
And then he was in the highway chase, like he was there.
He was in one of the cars and then he gets flipped, but he lives.
Yeah.
But where's his accent?
Where's his accent? Doesn't matter. He's got a little bouncing grenade that he can throw.
Yep.
Boom.
Boom, it's like a sonic grenade that he can like retract. I don't know. I don't know, man.
Boom, he says. Man. John Cena's back.
John Cena's back. Yep. I cannot believe. But I can believe it. Like, why are they brothers? Like, what a crazy decision to make in the last movie. But
he's got a car that has two giant cannons on the side of it. amazing.
This truthfully is the Avengers Endgame of this Fast and Furious.
But Shaw's back.
Shaw's back. The only thing that kind of sucks is, like, now that I'm invested in this for, like, being this really dumb franchise that I actually, that's, like, just stupid fun that you can turn. See? Just turn your brain off. Like, you guys are trying to rate these like you're rating, like, a Scorsese movie. Like, that's not, that should not be the approach for this. Like, once you do that, I wish The Rock was here.
This quote from Vin Diesel, relating to Tolkien is amazing. There's a reason why Tolkien stopped writing after a while, because it's so hard to continue mythologies. Comparing the Fast Saga to Lord of the Rings.
He's the goat.
Like, that's the kind of, like, this is the kind of confidence that the people that made Venom aspire for. To have the confidence to compare your Fast and Furious movie to Lord of the Rings, and to compare yourself to Tolkien, is just it's brilliant.
Oh, like, this movie's gonna make some money too.
Yes,
this movie's gonna make some summer.
Are you kidding?
This has all the summer blockbuster energy that you would ever need.
It's the formula that's been perfected by them at this point. Brie Larson's in this.
Brie Larson is in this movie
as just, she's just the one that is probably gonna fight Michelle Rodriguez at first,
and then they're gonna be friends.
Yeah,
and then they're gonna both fight
Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
Probably. When we see Charlize Theron and Michelle Rodriguez fighting this, she's like, surprise. She does the Loki thing. And Michelle Rodriguez is like, ah, oh, here we go. Because she fought, who she fought so far? She fought Ronda Rousey and won. She fought, she didn't fight Gal Gadot.
Nope.
Who'd she fight in the last one? I can't remember. She always fights somebody. Oh, she fought Gina Carano.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Yep.
Man, it's just. Oh, and Vin Diesel also wants Robert Downey Jr. in a Fast and Furious movie.
Do you think he would? I think he might say yes.
He said, this is what Vin Diesel, I love Vin Diesel quote so much, because, like, he's like the action version of, like, Tom Cruise, with, like, how Tom Cruise, like, Tom Cruise actually, like, studies movies and, like, cares about, like, cinema, and Vin Diesel, like, takes the bones of that and creates, like, his persona around that. So, like, he pretends, he says that he cares about movies, but he only cares about movies enough to relate them all back to Fast and Furious. So, like, so what he says about Robert Downey Jr., he goes, there's a character who is the antithesis, there's your word, of Dom, who is promoting AI and driverless cars. That's at direct odds with the Toretto mentality. And I'm like, at this point, you know what I would do? Call up Marvel and be like,
Timo,
can we just use Tony Stark and make him the villain of a Fast and Furious movie?
We'll change his name, but, like, yeah.
It's just Iron Man, but he's a Fast and Furious villain. That movie's making $3 billion.
Robert Downey Jr. alone being the villain would get you some money in there.
Just do Superior Iron Man, but he's a Fast and Furious villain.
Oh, my God. So, oh, what if they take the tech from Hobbs and Shaw that they used on Idris Elba and they put it into that guy? It's the guy that made the tech for that.
And it's just Iron Man.
Oh, my God.
Take that, James Cameron. We didn't talk much about the trailer. I don't care.
No,
it's crazy.
Again, we're not... People are trying to... Why are you trying to consume this like some art house movie? That's your problem. Like, you're going into this movie like, this needs to turn. Just,
it's the Lord of the Rings of car movies.
Just be stupid for 2+ hours and dumb and like rev an engine and like, it's crazy. It's dumb. You get to have fun. That's it.
I can't wait. He's got a crossover in his back pocket, right?
With something?
Yeah.
I don't know how well you could pull it off, but at the same time, this movie, this franchise has lost all credibility of, like, realism a while ago. It doesn't matter what you do now.
There's gotta be, I gotta imagine he's got a crossover in his back pocket. With what? I don't know.
Yeah.
Transformers is the most likely one. but we'll see.
What's, it's Universal, right? Is Fast and Furious?
Yeah.
Ooh. They're gonna do with
the monsterverse.
Yeah, you keep taking what I'm gonna say right out of my mouth.
Dom Toretto versus Dracula.
No, Dom Toretto versus the Mummy versus Tom Cruise.
Oh. Versus Luke Evans.
We have to cut it out. Go on to the next one.
Guardians 3.
Yeah, Guardians 3. The best one. The actual best.
The second best movie about family in this lineup. Yeah, this movie, Guardians 3, looks amazing.
Oh, it's the best trailer. It's got the best feel. Like, it's everything that I've personally loved about the Guardians just ramped up. And, like, when you talk about trilogy, obviously this movie hasn't come out, but when you talk about, like, trilogies and, like, for stuff, like, this is it. Like, this is exactly what I would want out of the last. Like, they feel genuine, like, a family now and, like, have genuine family problems. Like,
even bringing Gamora back, like, feels regular. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels normal, like, that they're able to fold her back in.
Right. But, yeah, this movie feels like it's going to be much more somber, much darker. It just looks really good. Like,
yeah.
Again, James Gunn is also going to pull of Y'all Must Have Forgot, like, how great I am, like, on the Marvel side of things, not on the, like, just in general, I mean, yes, in general, but, like, on the Marvel side of things, like, how much influence I had over that universe, too, and it's just...
And this is his swan song, like, he's going to put every little last bit of everything he has to make this movie great.
Yep.
And it doesn't look like it's going to disappoint. Everything looks super clean. The CGI looks really good.
Yep.
We got better looks at the High Evolutionary and Adam Warlock.
Yep.
Which are two characters that it's crazy that I'm even saying they're in this movie. Yep. But
remember when Iron Man was the thing?
Yeah. So, yeah, this movie just was really good. I think it's going to... I mean, the Guardians movies have always excelled at drawing emotion out of things, but this movie just feels like it's going to draw all the emotion out. Being, like, the end, basically, of this iteration of the Guardians as they keep touting it as. So I think it's going to be incredibly somber. It's also going to be incredibly touching. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of great heartfelt moments in this movie, not just, you know, I think people sometimes mistake, like, loss as the only emotion.
No.
Like, people have to die in order for things to be emotional, and that's just not true. Like, you can have a really heartfelt movie. Like, I think Guardians 1 is a great example of that. Yep. Like, yes, there's the sacrifice with Groot at the end, but he comes back pretty quickly. And that movie still has a ton of heart and a ton of emotion in it, especially at the end. Like, one of my favorite... It's weird that it's, like, an even emotional moment, but it kind of is, like, in Guardians 1 when they all join hands and he's like, you said it yourself, we're the Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, that's an amazing, like, emotional moment. You know what I mean? And I think this movie's just going to have a ton of those. I mean, the Guardians Holiday Special kind of gave us a preview of kind of the emotional touchstone that this movie's going to have for these characters.
Right. And we talked about it, how the Guardians haven't felt like the Guardians in 3 years almost. And then we get this Guardians special, or 4 years. And then we get the Guardians special and you're like, oh wait, this is how they're, you know, this is how they felt. And this is why, you know, we've grown so fond of them. And this is, again, like you said, the swan song. So this is it. This is every piece of every variation of emotion is finally going to be packed into this movie. That looks really clean. It looks really good. And I think this is going to be this possibly could end up being one of the better MCU movies just by, you know, just by this aura that's around it right now. So I'm really excited. I mean, it's my favorite MCU movie is the first one. So I have a feeling this could be up there. Like, how the anticipation for Wakanda Forever, obviously different circumstance, but in terms of the movie itself, this is where I think it can end up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we said basically this, that, you know, depending on how this movie goes, it's between this and Captain America as far as the trilogies are concerned on what the best trilogy is in the MCU. And, you know, I think this will probably be the one that kind of cements it as the best trilogy. Like, Captain America, the trilogy is amazing, but the first Avenger is just, like, okay. Like, it's pretty good, but it's just, it's not Guardians 1.
Yep.
You know, as great as Winter Soldier is, as great as Civil War are, you know, Guardians 1 and 2 are really, really great. So, and if Guardians 3 matches that, I think Guardians will stand the test of time as the best trilogy that the MCU's given us.
Right.
And, you know, this movie just looks amazing. And then the final trailer that had the internet just abuzz and still
has... I was not expecting that. I was really not expecting it.
Still has the internet abuzz. The trailer for The Flash coming out in June. It's finally coming.
Mm-hmm.
9 years after Ezra Miller was cast as Barry Allen,
it has been 9 years since he's been cast.
We have
since they've been cast.
Yeah, we have. That's crazy. Finally, our it's coming. It's officially coming. We'll see. Maybe June's still a ways away. It could still get delayed or something. But we finally got our first full trailer for The Flash, and it was it was all right. It was something.
It had an epic nature to it. Like, this feels like a, this does feel like a grandiose venture. And, I mean, if you want to look at it this way, this is the finale of the DCEU, so yep, they're going to probably pull out some stops.
Yeah, I guess my problem with it, and I told you this off camera, I think the night that we both saw the trailer, none of this feels earned, specifically for a character that we've only seen once, mm-hmm. like properly. And the fact, the idea that the entire multiverse relies on this character that we've only seen once feels a little odd.
Oh, I just got a crazy theory. Keep going. I just got a nuts theory.
And then again, like this, it has, this trailer has a lot of cool moments, but it's a bunch of moments. This movie, I'm going to put it out into the ether now. I'm officially saying it. This movie is going to be what everyone was afraid Spider-Man No Way Home was going to be. This trailer was entirely built upon the Batman reveal and the Supergirl reveal and the Zod reveal, which is an issue. Yeah. Like, if you wanted this to be what this is, you can probably take the Zod Supergirl stuff out of this and do something a little bit more kind of Batman Flash focused, if you really wanted to do the Batman thing, which I think is, you know, it's great. I mean, that song, yeah, the score is still incredible.
Who's doing, is Elfman doing the score for this movie?
No, I don't know who's, but I wouldn't be surprised if maybe.
It's very Elfman inspired though.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it was in Justice League when they showed Affleck's Batman, yep, and they did the score. They did like the same thing, but yeah, I mean, it's cool. Keaton's back, which is great. Not quite sure what he's going to be doing other than a couple close-ups and a couple lines here and there.
Well, the thing about this movie that I think, this movie, there's probably like 8 different versions of this movie, and I think that's,
yeah,
that might be my biggest problem is, I don't know how the end version of this movie is going to look, because this movie is, it's not like there's been small, like, there's probably been massive overhauls, like,
yeah,
there probably was a version of this movie where, like, Supergirl was Superman. Like, there have probably been versions of this movie where, like, you know, it's more Justice League focused, which is Flashpoint, essentially. Flashpoint's like that. Flashpoint kind of is like what Captain America Civil War was, like, where it's a Flash story, but, like, everybody's in this. Like, this is, like, and, you know, you talk about earned. I think I'll spin it for myself in the way, like, it doesn't feel earned, the fact that there's nobody else here. But it's, like, Michael Keaton's here, but, like, Henry Cavill and, like, Gal Gadot aren't here. Like, that's
and what... And why, other than it being Michael Keaton, is Michael Keaton in this universe?
Yeah.
How did he get here?
Right. I think it's got something to do with Spider-Man.
How did he get inserted into this narrative? Like, if you wanted to...
It's because of the limbo of Ben Affleck. But then Ben Affleck's like, I'll come back.
What you could have done is just gotten Jeffrey Dean Morgan to play...
Flashpoint Batman. Been so much better if that was the case. And this is like, I'm excited to see Michael Keaton
back as
Batman. Like, I think that's going to be really cool. But I think you probably just made the best point. Like, why is he there though? Like, why? What's the point of him being there beyond nostalgia? And like, I think the thing that worked for No Way Home was like, yes, it's a nostalgia factor type of thing. But like, there'd only ever been these Spider-Man, like, they were, like, the building blocks. Not, I mean, Michael Keaton's Batman was, like, a massive building block, but I think the thing is, like, again, it doesn't feel like there was no earning this. Like, the MCU had been going on for so, so long. Like,
and what No Way Home had was the tethers, yeah, between these three characters.
Right.
They had the tethers between the three Spider-Man, which is loss.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, losing Uncle Ben, losing Gwen, losing Aunt May, like, those three kind of bonded over that, with the villains aside. Like, even the villains kind of tethered themselves to everything. Like, there's never been a hint in the Keaton universe that there's metahumans, mm-hmm, or anything like that. Like, we're gonna have to build into the story that Keaton's Batman knows who the Flash is. and knows who Superman is and knows all of this.
And remember, years ago, this was just supposed to be like a more true detective story with Flash and Cyborg. It was supposed to be Ezra Miller and Ray Fisher were supposed to be like the initial piece of this in like 2016. And like, I really wish that was the movie at this point, because like, however epic in nature this is going to be, and however
Movie's going to have in some incredibly high moments.
Oh, it's going to be like borderline euphoric when some of these things happen. Like, do you think that Henry Cavill and Gal Gadot are in this movie? I think they're going to be in here.
I don't think so.
I think because of the last 2 months that they, I think 2 months ago they took them out, like when James Gunn's like, all right, this is going to be the plan. And now I think within the last month, they probably put them back in. Like, I think they're going to add them back in and get this. They're going to be like, all right, this is it. This is the end game of the DCEU. Like, let's just throw everybody back in there.
But can they do that without it feeling like hokey?
I don't think they care. I think that's my. I genuinely don't think they care because how hardcore are the Snyder fans?
Yeah,
they're like the most hardcore. So I don't think anybody.
But
is this
just not going to get people? I mean, people are doubling down already. But like doing that isn't that just going to make people go? But give us more of this. And they're just gonna be like, no.
I don't think they care. I don't think they care.
It's just crazy to me that it's. Like I said, it's this movie is everything that Spider-Man No Way Home people thought it was going to be, and just like dialed up. Like, I have so many questions. Like, how did Keaton's Batman get here? Why is Man of Steel happening in Keaton's universe?
Yeah, they're putting a huge emphasis on Man of Steel. And again, I think it was one of those things where, like, your universe isn't built out enough, so they had to, like, dartboard it, but they only had, like, 3 things on the dartboard to pull from. Like, what are you pulling from? Like, Man of Steel had the most fleshed out lore, so that's the only callback thing you could have pulled
from. That you could do, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Unless you were going to call back to, well, I don't know.
There's not, like, what else?
Ares?
I was thinking, like,
Doomsday? Like, you only have.
But what is Doomsday a subset? Like, what is that a subset of? It's a subset of Kryptonian DNA.
Black Adam?
Like, Shazam? Like, but people, that's not as popular as the main.
Like, No Way Home had 20 years.
I forgot Shazam's coming out and it's technically in this universe. This doesn't make any sense.
Like, No Way Home had 20 years of stuff to pull from that people remember fondly and can tie into this movie. This movie doesn't have that. What are you going to do? Bring the Joker back? Bring Jared Leto back? Bring Nicholson back?
Somehow Jared Leto returned.
Somehow. Look, if they get Nicholson back to do something in this movie,
which would never happen,
but that would be the only thing that would make sense that Keaton would be in this is if Nicholson was also in this.
I don't know.
Tommy Lee Jones is back.
Isn't it funny that what's his name's in here? Or what am I thinking about? It's funny that Michael Keaton did Birdman, and like, isn't this what Birdman kind of was about? And then he did the thing that he said Birdman was about.
Yeah, it's.
But again, money.
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, again, the No Way Home comparison. What people thought No Way Home was going to end up doing is like it was going to happen. And it was going to have these incredibly high moments and then people were going to forget about it. I don't think that's happened. I think people still think of that movie quite fondly and those moments quite fondly because they feel earned. I think this movie is exactly what's going to happen. There's going to be a couple cool nostalgic moments for Keaton. They're going to play the song. Supergirl's going to show up and do some Superman adjacent things.
And I think people are going to fall in love with Sasha Cole too.
She's also not going to be Supergirl going forward.
Oh, right, it's just this one. But I mean, when they were filming this movie, none of them knew this was going to happen. So.
Right, but that's the problem.
Yeah,
that's been the problem with this movie the entire time. Is it's somehow endured and survived all of these different phases of the DCU that has been built and deconstructed and rebuilt and deconstructed 3 separate times now.
Yeah,
and this movie's transcended all of those, so now it subsequently has to incorporate all of those.
I'm just a little nervous, I mean the
movie's gonna make money.
Oh, this movie's
I'm not saying it's
money.
Gonna flop.
The Snyder fans are gonna be out there and you know in waves.
I'm just questioning if it's gonna be good.
I'm also really nervous about this VFX. They look extremely unfinished. I mean, like, drastically unfinished. And like, I don't think this is one of those situations. You know what I think's been happening? I always feel like people are like, this doesn't look good, but it's gonna be better when the movie comes out, and then the movie comes out and it doesn't look better. I think that's been happening a lot in the last 4 or 5 or 4 years. And I mean, obviously we know what happened at Marvel, like them being overworked, and like, I'll never blame them because I just feel like it's not, how many years have they been working on Avatar for? That's why those are so finished. And like, I saw this Twitter comment today that said like, oh, mind you, Avatar came out like a couple months ago in this side of the, like, they were working on that movie for years. Like, they've been working on that movie forever, and they don't need to worry about continuity any, like, they're only working off one movie, and they're working off, like, a director that's, like, hellbent. Like, he doesn't have, like, a ton of studio oversight. He's, like, he's gonna do whatever he wants. Like, these movies have so much continuity they have to focus on. They have to make sure things make sense. Like, no wonder VFX gets lost in translation. And you know what probably happened? They probably got told to restart, like, four times. Like, all right, we need to remap everything because now we're gonna have Michael Keaton instead of Ben Affleck. And then they were like, oh, shoot, now we have to remap it because Ben Affleck's also going to be in this movie again. Like, that, like, amalgamation of everything is just, it might be for the, it's like, too much of good stuff is bad stuff.
Yeah.
Man. And we didn't even talk about Ezra Miller once in this whole thing, and
that's another problem.
Oh, my theory is that they're going to be, I think it's going to be a bait and switch. Like, you know how they think that, like, the long-haired version that has the yellow is going to be the Reverse Flash? I think it's a bait and switch, and that one's actually Barry Allen, and the other one's the Reverse Flash.
Interesting. That'd be fun.
That other one just, or the main continuity one, feels very calm and very cool customer-ish, which is just not in line of what Ezra's was doing this whole time. I don't know if you've seen the world. I just think that would be kind of cool. I guess it's also because we were watching Flash clips like an hour ago. So, but, or from the TV show, but I think that would be interesting. Like, it's very easy to tell that, like, one of them's the Reverse Flash in this whole thing, and that's why the thing went bad. But who knows? Who's to say?
Who's to say?
I think it's going to be fun. I think it's just going to be a crazy, like, bombastic movie.
I think it'll have, like I said, I think it's going to have some really great moments.
Bale's not in this movie, idiots.
Nope. Just
calm down.
I think it's going to have some really great moments. I think it's going to have moments that people are going to be really excited for, but I think in the end, that's going to be incredibly hollow. Like, I think that's all this movie's going
to
be.
Oh, you know, oh, that's what I wanted to say. You know what I was thinking about? You know what movie just did that to us from the same universe? Black Adam just did it to us. Where, what was the only thing that people talked about from Black Adam? What was it?
The Superman cameo.
What did people not talk about from that movie?
The movie. Besides the Justice Society.
Hey, but guess what? The thing they didn't talk about.
Black Adam.
Exactly. They don't. Nobody talks about Black Adam. They only ever talk about the Justice Society, and that lasted like a month and a half. And then anybody ever talks about that movie is just Superman. That's it. That movie has no story. It doesn't have bones. It doesn't have a lot of story to it. There were definitely. I mean, we had some pretty like highs of highs watching that movie, but like, I think it's something to say, like, for prolonged longevity, like, how important it is. Like, we're remembering the Guardians of the Galaxy, how, like, 10 years later.
Yeah.
We're not remembering Black Adam months later. So that's an issue, and I think that this movie might, that might be the biggest suffer this movie might have to hit and
because
have to hold.
Ultimately, the movie is The Flash.
Yeah, and it's a lot of not Flash in here, so.
And Flashpoint is one of the, you know, pillar storylines.
Yeah. Even if you,
in any comic.
Even if you read that Flashpoint, that story's really tight because you've read it. It's very like, it weaves, but like, I don't know, it's almost like you're watching like a news broadcast that's telling you like the other stuff, but like that main line stuff is all through Barry. Like all the, this feels very much of like Michael Keaton's here, like Ben Affleck's here, Sasha Cole's here, like Michael Shannon's here. Like it feels like that's so. And I mean, obviously, they might want to have that like that on purpose because the first poster for that movie, Ezra Miller's not facing the poster, and the second poster is like Sasha Cole, like front and center. So like, it might be like that's another that might be honestly might be the biggest thing. Like they might not want to market Ezra Miller as much as they were going to before.
Yeah, it's, you know, it just goes back to that whole thing of like this movie could have just been dumped. Like 5 years ago.
And not do Flashpoint. It's just, I mean, we always say, like, imagine doing Flash. Well, I do think, again, 2-3 years ago, this movie probably was going to reset this universe, but, like,
now it's ending it.
Yeah, and reset it to, like, still be in the DCEU. Like, this is resetting it to kill everybody and kill it.
It's crazy that, like, the through line of this movie was like, why is your first Flash movie going to be Flashpoint? Now has become, why is your only Flash movie going to be Flashpoint?
Like, why are you ending the entire universe? I mean, that's how they ended, you know, the main continuity to get to New 52 was through Flashpoint, but like, that's justified. Like, this is not even remotely justified.
No. I mean, you know, like I said, there were some cool moments, but I'm much more excited for Guardians than I am for this movie. Yeah. I'm excited for this movie as just to see what it is, like the spectacle of it.
Yeah.
And like what did this 9-year odyssey result in?
Like, look, I mean, I've said it like, I mean, you call me the Snyder fanboy out of the two of us. Like, you know, I love Man of Steel. Like, I'll throw on the Snyder cut. Cause like, I think it's kind of cool. Like, it's kind of a cool movie. Like, if you take it for what it is, like there's good points in the DCEU, but if you look at like the cell of a cohesive story, like start to finish, and you just branch different things that kind of all, you know, come back to a central point, like it did not have that. Like Shazam doesn't even exist to the rest of them, but Shazam is so like hell bent on like them existing to him where it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Like you're telling me this Superman leveled power character, just nobody talks about him anytime or nobody's went to see him, but Black Adam shows up and immediately like Shazam was there for like a couple of weeks and like Shazam was there or Black Adam was there for a day and like Superman showed up. Like we got to make this make sense.
Yeah. And at this point, it's too late. You can't make it make sense. Yeah. It's too late.
Oh, Lanterns is coming. The Authority's coming. It's too late.
This movie is going to be what it is, and it's going to fall into that just like Black Adam, Venom, Morbius, like spectacle.
Oh no, that watching. Means it's going to be one of our favorite movies.
Probably, yeah.
That's usually how it goes.
All right, let's move on from The Flash and talk about Ant-Man. So, Ant-Man Quantumania is right around the corner. Mm-hmm. It's this week. It's a couple days from now. Happy Valentine's Day, by the way,
everybody.
Happy Valentine's Day. Because it's Valentine's Day as we're recording this. So, take that for what, for what you will about our lives.
Favorite romantic movie. Maybe we can save that for the end. Maybe we'll do that.
Days of Thunder?
What's up?
Just kidding.
Did you say Thor, Love, and Thunder?
No, I said Days of Thunder.
Oh, I thought you said Thor, Love, and Thunder. Which, I mean, technically, yes. Maybe we'll save that for the end. Maybe
we'll that'll be the... We can save it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Quantumania is coming. It's coming out to a rocky reception thus far.
Mm-hmm. It's been tough out of the gate. This movie is being, you know... You always have to take premieres with a grain of salt. You just have to, because it's not only that it's the opening night and you're, who's around you when you're at the people that made the movie are starring in the movie, the people that you've been watching in the movies, like they're there like next to you as like walking by you. So you're going to have a little bit of a heightened sense of, you know, I'm going to enjoy this and take that for what it is, which is almost maybe a little bit better because it's just like, it takes away a level of hate. But I mean, you know, as much as we like to not do that, like you still need to, you know, be realistic to certain things. So yeah, this movie's started off tough. It's been a rough, it's at 58% on Rotten Tomatoes right now with over 100, critic reviews. I mean, the main things are this movie's shorter. It's 2 hours. It's 2 hours for a plot that should be way longer than 2 hours. That was one of my things about Thor, Love, and Thunder, of like, how is this movie so short for how, like, grand this movie is supposed to be? Big things are, good things that I've been hearing is, I mean, obviously, the big one, it's Kang. It's Jonathan Majors' Kang has been the big thing that people are loving, calling him, you know, he could be one of the best MCU villains. He's putting the universe on his shoulders. He's going to be the, you know, the villain that can, you know, hold them over till the time you get to Avengers Secret Wars and possibly beyond, because the rumor is they're going to split that movie into two. And then, I mean, Paul Rudd obviously is good, but some of the negatives are talking about the world itself doesn't look great. It doesn't feel great, doesn't look great. This movie's called Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania. The Wasp piece is not in this movie.
Which I guess I'm not surprised. Like, as some people are.
I mean, we kind of know what happened, so yeah. I don't think people know what happened to Evangeline Lilly, and I genuinely think that's what happened. Like
I think I resigned myself to that fact like a while ago. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, she's just not going to be in this.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like that a while ago, so I feel like I just accepted that. So mm-hmm. like when people were saying like the Wasp really isn't in this, I'm like, yeah, I figured that was going to happen.
Yeah, I just think. I mean, we haven't seen it or anything like that, but just when
you're... Or have we?
I mean, time is a...
Time is a flat circle.
Yeah, time's a flat circle. But, I mean, what we've been hearing is that this movie just is not... The story's not tight. It's just very... It feels like a mess. Like, there's just... You know what I think it is? This movie's trying to disguise itself as an Ant-Man movie, where this is an event. Like, what is this is repackaged into an Avengers movie?
I just said the reason this is an Ant-Man movie is because they were too afraid to make it a Kang movie.
A, they might have been too afraid to make it a Kang movie. B, they finally hit the limits of how people, like, you know, how grand, like, an Ant-Man movie can be, in my opinion.
Well, I think, Peyton Reed asked for this.
Yep. Yeah, yep.
We talked about it.
He did ask for this. He genuinely did. And I mean, I might go as far to say it might not be Peyton Reed's fault. It might be the people he worked for's fault. And that he said, I'll take this. They're like, all right, well, we're going to do the biggest things we can possible. And a lot of people are saying there's no stakes in this movie, which is, that's sort of alarming to me that this
movie. Yeah, I'm not sure how that could be.
Yeah. I mean, it might be. It might
maybe there's no stakes for Ant-Man.
I could. It might be the fact that, like, if there's an infinite amount of versions of this guy, then what? Like, who cares that they're in here too? And you know what? Also, might make that worse for the story is like that might tell me that they might have not went too hard on the relationship factor, like the family dynamic relationship factor, because that should be what your stakes are focused. If this is going to be the thing, and like the universe stakes, like we've been through the universe stakes. Like, what has The Last of Us taught us? Like, have the people stakes. Like, that's where you're going to get everything personified.
I also have this question about a majority of these critics that have seen this movie.
Sure. Yep.
Are they aware that we've already seen this guy in the MCU?
Sure.
It's a valid question.
Yep.
Like, did these critics sit down and watch Loki?
Yeah.
And, like, figure out what's going on with him? Or are they just looking at this in a vacuum? Mm. Like, I do have that question. Like, we talked about how this is the lowest rated Marvel movie, but critically, since The Eternals. Mm. And we both think The Eternals is pretty good. So, like, did these critics just miss it? Like, did they just miss the point of this movie? It's possible.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the pitfall kind of Marvel.
Yep.
And it's, you know, it's not their fault. It's kind of Marvel's fault because Marvel has built this cohesive universe where these movies, some of them are not designed to be viewed singularly.
Yep. And also, I mean, I think, all right, there's levels to this, right?
There's levels to this.
There's no...
He just flipped his chair around and sat back the other way.
I turned my hat backwards. My hat's already backwards, but... There's Fast and Furious and Morbius, right? Like, that's
how,
like,
dare you?
Yeah, like, nobody's supposed to go into those movies and be like, we need cinema. No, that's stupid. Like,
that's what Vin Diesel thinks.
Right. Yeah. And then there's, like, Transformers, where, like, they might pull, like, on your heartstrings a little bit, but again, they're giant robots fighting. And then, like, I think the MCU is, like, above, that's where it lives. Like, it probably lives in the middle, where, like...
And then it oscillates. Like, it can hit
exactly,
those...
Exactly,
like, it can hit those moments. Like, you think about Infinity War.
Yeah, or Wakanda Forever. Like, it hits... It can still get to those levels of, like, up... Like, when you try, like, it might touch those movies that, like, those upper echelon movies, but, like, then you can go down into it and be like, who is Malekith the Accursed? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a wave that happens in it, too. So, I think that might be one of the big issues. And, like, I also think, and this is, I think it also hurts that this is coming out around Oscar time, too. So, like, people's brains are heightened by seeing clips of, like, the best movies of 2022, and then you put this in there, and you're like, oh.
Yeah,
like,
and it's coming off the heels of Black Panther, also.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like, within the confines of its own universe, it's coming off the heels of this movie that got an actress nominated for an Academy Award.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we both really, really like, like, to the point where it's like, I think it's ended up in our top fives or top sevens, somewhere around there. I can't remember exactly when we did the list, but it's coming off the back of that too. So, like, it's facing this weird competition from its own stable that, you know, tonally Ant-Man and Black Panther are two totally different things.
Right.
And I just feel like, as far as, like, the critic thing, like, it just feels like the critics aren't sure what to, what are they grading it against?
I will say too, like, you know what's funny? I've been seeing on, like, and people get influence from other people too, because I watched maybe seven reviews, right? And all of them are pretty the same, and like saying this movie is not great or anything like that, but like all of them had have different reasons that one person said was good that the other one said was bad, but magically like they're equating to the movie not being great. So like for me that feels off. Like how wouldn't one of you guys say that this movie's pretty good or one of you say that's pretty bad? Like how is it the same thing that some, like, I mean that's art, like art is subjective, but like that feels a little weird to me that, like, it's almost like somebody said, one person said this movie's not great, and then everybody's like, well, I don't want to get killed, so I'm also going to say this movie wasn't great, but then my reasoning is going to be drastically different from somebody else that said that thing was the thing they didn't like. The big thing for me that I heard was MODOK. Like, I heard one that they were, like, killing MODOK, said it was stupid, it was dumb, and then another one said it was great, and I'm like, but you guys are saying like two completely opposite things, but you're landing in the middle again. Like it's weird. It's funny to me how that's working, but
yeah, it's, I don't know. It's super curious to me. I just think this movie is, I don't even know how to explain it. Like this movie is just, it's different than it's so different than what we got in Black Panther, and it's so different than what we got in like the Eternals. And,
yeah, I think it's the sell. No, because what is this marketing is half your battle, right? Because so what is this movie being marketed as? It's being marketed as like this. Oh, this is the start of the Kang Dynasty. Like, and what's your comparison is Thanos, and Thanos, but Thanos didn't need marketing to back it. He went in and operated. You know.
But also, what does that mean to critics?
Exactly.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Like, they're going in to view this as a singular experience.
But I think the idea of the critic has evolved since the MCU came out, no? Like,
maybe.
That's what I think is the, like, if you sold somebody,
but I
like,
I still don't think they're all totally, like, locked in.
I think what I'm meaning to say is, like, in 2012, like, or 2008, like, or let's say when Loki debuted and, like, you find out Loki's going to be the villain of the Avengers, like, they probably don't care then. But, like, you don't think critics are basing their experience off of, like, oh, Kang's going to be the next big bad and taking that and running with that
to
start the movie?
I'm not sure that they are.
Well, I mean, we're only thinking about critics that have like dedicated like fandom channels versus like a lot of these critics are just movie, like they're
that's
traditional
what I'm saying, yeah.
critics.
Like I'm not sure that they're like, oh shoot, Kang the Conqueror. Mm-hmm. Like I don't think like Jack Smith from the New York Times is like, mm-hmm. oh man, I can't wait for Kang the Conqueror. Like I think he's just like, oh, I have to go see this Ant-Man movie because mm-hmm. my boss told me I have to. Yeah. Like.
Right.
Like it's, you know, there's a lot of those, you know, top of like, you know, the fandom critics also. Like, that's why I feel like these critical responses to this movie are like, yeah, this movie's kind of nothing, but this guy is great.
Mm-hmm. This
because,
guy's
like,
great, yeah. Ant-Man, or Paul Rudd's funny, he's charismatic, he's good. Like.
And I will say, Catherine Newton, I don't see it.
It's so giraffe. She doesn't feel like, I mean, people grow from when they're a child, but like, she doesn't feel like that kid version of Cassie, like,
and
at
I, like,
all. She
I don't know.
The bones
I just,
of it. Yeah.
Seeing her in other things, like, I don't see it. Like, I don't see it with her as an actress.
I just think they wanted a bigger name for whenever they announced this Young Avengers thing. Like, I think they wanted, like, a bigger name to go against, like, Hailee Steinfeld, you know what I mean? And whoever, and the kid from, that's playing Wiccan, like, I think they wanted, like, that caliber up there. So I think that's why they made the change.
I'm not totally sold on her, like, her acting quite yet.
I mean, she has a tall task to do because you're going off of, what, two Academy Award nominees / winners. You're going off of Evangeline Lilly that, you know, helped hold one of the most famous TV shows alive, like, on her shoulders. And then you're going off of Paul Rudd, like, one of the most charismatic human beings on the planet. Like,
yeah, but, it, you know, when you...
And then Jonathan Majors on top of that,
yeah,
too. It's
but,
difficult.
I mean, the thing about that is we've seen actresses or actors mm-hmm. rise to that occasion.
We just saw that with The Last of Us with a 10-year-old do that.
We also just saw it in Black Panther too,
yeah,
with Letitia Wright. Mm-hmm. Like she had it as far as Shuri was concerned as like the comic relief and like this the kind of jokey quippy character, but like if you would have asked me like before the movie came out, like do you think she can rise to like dramatic character actor? I'd be like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen it. I don't
sure.
Doesn't mean she can't. I just don't know. And then she did, and I was like, whoa.
Right.
So, like, Catherine Newton, like, I just haven't seen it. Like, I don't know. Like, is she going to be able to be, she kind of is going to be, like, the emotional core of this movie, no?
Like, it's got to be their relationship.
So, it goes back to The Last of Us. Like, if you can't sell that, if that doesn't work, the movie's not going
to
work.
Sure. But I mean, the only defense I'll take to that is, like, again, to my point of how are we supposed to consume these things? Like, is it supposed to be Joe Smith from the New York Times? Or is it supposed to be, like, New Rock Stars?
His name was Jack Smith.
Jack Smith from the New York Times? Or should it be, like, Eric Voss at New Rock Stars? Like, which way are we supposed to consume this? Because, like...
Both?
B-O-F-F. Both. I don't, That's the question.
That is the question. I think it's an interesting... I think this movie more than... Most.
You just gave me a really good idea for an episode is how we're supposed to consume this content in the modern age, like how drastically different it was 20 years ago versus today.
We should go down just like the list of the MCU movies and be like, how are we supposed to consume this one?
Yeah. That it's like it's as funny as like this is, like I feel like this is like a really good
like Avengers point. Infinity War. How are we supposed to consume that?
Yeah. Like versus like, you know, you give me Captain America Winter Soldier, like, shot very practically, like, that versus, like, I don't know, give me, like, Guardians 2, like, how are you supposed to, what it's, do you weigh this on?
Like, it's almost like we praise the MCU on its versatility, like, so often, but, like, is that versatility kind of, like, becoming a downside now?
Yeah.
Because now, like, we don't know how to grade these things.
Because Werewolf by Night and, I don't know... Thor Love and Thunder are drastically different. Like, yeah. I'm talking, like, as different as... But are they really too much different? Like, is there not, like, a villain? And is there not, like, a hero? Like, is it... Does it not have... Like, it has those things, so, like...
How are we supposed to...
What's the gauge? Like, how do we judge these things?
So. Yeah, it's really interesting, and it's funny, because, like, I feel like we went into this, like, we were going to talk about the other two Ant-Man movies, but, like, this feels like a much more interesting discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, as we're talking through it, like, I'm thinking about it now, like, yeah, how are we, what is the scale here? Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to add this onto our phase four to, you know, it's like the college thing of, like, just to piggyback on what they said. Like, truthfully, I feel like the way we were talking about phase four, like, I feel like phase four was the first phase, like, where that was, became the issue, and that's actually an incredible point you just made about that, about this idea that, like, you know, how are you, like, before the versatility was, like, a good thing, but now it's, like, I think phase four, the versatility was, like, for us, I don't think it's too much of a downfall, because you won't get characters that are so much different and so great in their own rights, but, like, narratively, that could be a downfall, because it's, like, how are you supposed to, like... What am I supposed to latch onto, and what am I supposed to just leave? And I think a lot of people started leaving a lot of things.
And it's also partially Marvel's fault, because they're like, you know, they make a big deal about, like, no, we want our movies to be recognized, like, as movies. You know what I mean? Like, as, like, real things.
Right.
And, like, well, now you're going to get...
Yeah, yep, that's a really good point.
Now you're going to get judged on that scale.
And I mean, to my point about, like, the 15-year difference, like, movies 15 years, like, your universe, like, as much as it jolted, like, this energy back into the movies, like, what's the other side, what was the thing that suffered? Like, I always talk about Matt Damon's, you know, his, what he talked about when he did the Hot Ones interview, like, before, like, he didn't ever imagine having to worry about making a romantic comedy in 2005. Like, that's a hit. Like, depending on who you get, that's gonna be, but, like, you can't do that now unless it's gonna be on a streaming website. Like, what are the movies that are gonna sell? Like, the superhero movies are gonna be the ones that sell now. Like, that's, like, let's just say, for example, like, they're making this Nike movie, right? If that Nike, like, it's Nike, like, one of the
Michael Jordan,
Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, Viola Davis,
directing.
Yeah. Like, Oscar winner director Ben Affleck, like, one of the biggest, I mean, brands in the world, some of the biggest actors in movie history, like, are making this movie versus, like, a movie about, like, a guy that shrinks. But what movie's gonna make more money now? Like, the movie about the guy, like, that's absurd. Like, to somebody 15 years ago, like, that sounds so stupid to say, but...
Yeah, like, Marvel, you know, like you said, 15 years ago was, like, the plucky underdog. Like, look at this Iron Man movie that made almost $1 billion. Like, this is crazy. And now it's, like, become the juggernaut that, like, all these other movies are trying to break through. Like, it's really interesting how the kind of, like, the paradigm shift, like, happened over the last couple of years, where, like, people were active, including us, were actively surprised that Top Gun Maverick did what it did.
Yeah,
like, people were like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, how did this happen? We're like, if this was the 90s and a Top Gun movie made $1 billion, nobody would bat an eye.
No, no, they'd be like, oh,
Tom Cruise.
Yeah, it's Tom Cruise. It's the sequel that came out 10 years later, like 5 to 10 years later.
Top Gun, right? Yeah, it's awesome. Whereas, like, by that same metric, if, like, a Top Gun sequel had come out and then an Iron Man movie had come out and made, like, the same money, people would be like, whoa, this Iron Man movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's so interesting that, like, how the paradigm has shifted over the last, you know, since the MCU's
Like the Roman Empire, like, you know, the thing that made you incredibly great can be the thing that destroys, like, possibly the greatest run of a franchise and like a franchise that, oh, it's funny that Babylon, remember when I did my Babylon review a couple weeks ago? It's one of my favorite movies of 2022 now. Like, it's genuinely in my top three. Like, before I was like, this movie's cool. It's I think it's one of the best movies because I finally got it. Like, I understood, like, that movie's, like, it's a great story. One of the big themes of that movie is, like, evolution of cinema. Like, I don't think people really, we just went through one of the most drastic evolutions of cinema in, like, in human history. Like, the 1920 to 1930 was from silent films to talking films, and you know what people thought back then? That it was going to be the destruction of everything. And guess what we got from it? I mean, we got the things that we wouldn't have now. And I think this just turned into, let's just turn it another huge one. Like, the French New Wave was a big one in the 50s and 60s. Like, that was a big one into cinema. Like, this is a massive one because, you know, the big thing is, like, now we're taking from the theater itself and we're putting, now these actors that might not have lost roles, that they can go get whatever show they want and put it on a streaming service or put any movie they want, and they get a chance to tell their story. But what that does is, like, now it's an oversaturation of everything. Like, anything that you want, you can get, which is good, but, like, that's so much stuff to have to watch and keep up with.
Yeah, I mean, and I think this Ant-Man movie, now that we're having this discussion, really presents itself as an interesting test case. Like, can Marvel still get away with putting out just, like, a regular movie, like, superhero, like, kind of flighty movie? Mm-hmm. Like, can they still get away with that? Because Thor Love and Thunder would say no.
Mm-hmm.
Thor Love and Thunder would say they can't get away with it, at least not without some, like, extreme backlash.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, can they still pull off that middling kind of thing? Or is now the bar so high that, like, it has to be Wakanda Forever, or it has to be, you know, Shang-Chi kind of passed that bar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the bar was still there, but Shang-Chi hit it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, for some, Eternals didn't hit it. For some, Eternals did hit it. Thor, Love, and Thunder didn't hit that bar.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they felt it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they felt that kind of, like,
strike across the bow. And I also think it doesn't help that they had one of their main heroes, too. It was, like, remember, Thor Love and Thunder was supposed to be the sure thing, like, because that was Thor, like, that, I feel like Thor Love and Thunder and Hawkeye should have been were supposed to be the two, where, like, alright, at least we can fall back on the two classic Avengers from 2012, like, that lasted this whole thing, but, like, those two movies were probably, like, on the lower end of the totem pole, whereas, like, Shang-Chi was at the top of the totem pole, like, all those other things, so.
And I think the people, interestingly enough, like, I feel like the people making, you know, when you think about Shang-Chi versus Black Widow and Thor Love and Thunder, like, it really felt like Shang-Chi, like, Daniel Destin Critton felt like, I have to hit that bar, or else I'm sunk.
I do want to talk about movie makers and directors, too.
Whereas, like, Taika Waititi kind of was like, I can just do
whatever I want. Doesn't matter. I can do whatever I want.
Going to, you know, talking about an established character, I feel like Sam Raimi kind of felt like, I think he felt more like Daniel Destin Cretton than he did Taika Waititi, because he was like, I'm back in the superhero universe, like, I'm getting another shot.
And I think what he also realized is, like, this is the most, this is a big thing of how it's evolved. Before, like, you know who the most, you know, who had to take the toughest brunt of, like, the criticism was, like, Tarantino, Cameron, Scorsese. Like, now, like, I feel like they get some passes now versus it's like, and again, they're making some of the greatest movies to this day of all time. Like, you know, Spielberg added into that too, and some other people like Spike Lee, but like, now it's like the most scrutinized movies that you're gonna have are these, like, they dedicate the most time from the media. Like, if let's say ABC, because I was watching the Super Bowl and, like, yeah, they had Paul Rudd on in the morning because he's a Chiefs fan. Like, If there was a Brad Pitt, let's take Killers of the Flower movie that's supposed to come out later, a Martin Scorsese movie with Leonardo DiCaprio leading, I guarantee you. What movie's coming out at the end of this year for Marvel? Let's say, what movie's coming out at the end of the year for Marvel?
Is that the Marvels?
Let's say it's the Marvels. Like, I promise you, I think if they had a choice of ABC had to run one, they'd probably take, like, Brie Larson and Nia DaCosta versus Martin Scorsese, like, just to run something for something, because what's the main thing that you could take your whole family to see? Like, an MCU movie. Like, it's so much different. It is really drastically different.
But also, on, like, the flip side, that pressure point that you talk about these directors being under is a very interesting one, because, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, people only knew a handful of, like, directors.
Yeah, yep.
Like, nobody would care that Peyton Reed is doing this Ant-Man right. movie, but now, because he's doing an MCU movie, they're like, Peyton Reed better bring it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. Whereas, like, the guy's only directed a handful of movies, like, in his life, but now, you know, and I mean, props to him, like, he took this third Ant-Man movie as, like, a personal challenge.
Yeah.
You know, and he wanted kind of, like, a bigger thing, and, you know, but at the same time, like, he's also done two of these. So he's kind of, like, also in that, like, Taika Waititi box of, like, I've already banked two Ant-Man movies. Like, sure, he probably feels some sort of pressure to, like, rise to the whatever self-imposed challenge he had. But, like, Daniel Destin Cretton had to nail Shang-Chi.
Yeah.
I hate to keep going back to that. But, like, it's really the only example of a director in Phase 4, at least, that kind of had, like, their first shot at this.
Let's go even farther. What's Civil War about? It's mm-hmm. about government oversight, right? For the MCU, I think it's the same exact thing. I don't think Peyton Reed got to do exactly what he wanted to do, because I guarantee you there was a group of people led by Kevin Feige that said, you can do maybe some things that you're gonna do. But, like, you know how, like, I hate to say, like, a normal movie, but in a normal movie, like, a director's probably calling most of the shots, like 95% of the shots, right? And you can go back to, if you don't believe me, you can go back to director interviews. Like, they'll say, like, studios will tell you, you need the bigger ones, you need to do this, this, and this. Like,
well, look at Cameron.
Right. Like, Cameron had to wait 30 plus years to get that luxury, and he had to work his tail off just to get that.
And he had to make the biggest movie of all time.
He had to make, like, movie after, and he, in, yes, in his 60s, he does get the right to go, like, hey, I'm gonna do what I want, because what's the movie that's holding this whole, like, this whole building up? Like,
I own
what paid for this building? It's Titanic and Avatar, so.
Yeah.
But I promise you that, like, that Peyton Reed's probably, like, Shang-Chi, I think, is a variable, because it's, like, it doesn't have, like, so, like, it doesn't have this insane hold over the universe where, you know, Daniel Destin Cretton be like, hey, we're going to focus on the hand-to-hand. The hand-to-hand needs to be tight, because once people go and look this character up, they're going to be like, all right, so he's the great, oh, there's a better hand-to-hand fighter than Daredevil, which we've seen, and, like, Iron Fist, which we've seen. Like, all right, we need to make sure the hand-to-hand's tight. We need to make sure the villain's tight, because what's the stipulation of the universe so that the villains aren't great? Like, got to make sure the villain's tight. The world's got to look good. Like, it's got to look solid. Like, we're going to have humor, like, and we can add things, like, you know, your score can be cool, like, all those things. But I guarantee you, Peyton Reed's like, all right, you have Kang now. Like, some of the things he probably wanted to do, like, story-wise, character-driven-wise, like, probably got cut just to make sure, like, oh, the Cell Kang Dynasty's coming. Like, he probably didn't get as much as he wanted to do.
It's the Doctor Strange thing with the Illuminati. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like it's much of the same thing, like, you have to insert the Illuminati into this because multiverse, mm-hmm. and, you know, we're building out this multiversal concept, whereas, like, we both have come around to the idea that, like, no, the Illuminati is actually the worst part of that movie.
Yep.
And if it had just been more, you know, focus on Doctor Strange and America Chavez, like, traversing the multiverse, and Scarlet Witch kind of trying to, like, intercepting them at, mm-hmm. like, every turn, that's probably a better, it's probably, we both think that movie is pretty good. It's probably even better if it's just, it's so interesting, like,
and we didn't even talk about this idea of the fan service thing that got just nuked by the time that Endgame came out, because the way we consume movies inside of a theater is so nuts now. Like, you'd get kicked out of a theater 10 years ago for acting like that. Like, now it's, like, to the point where, like, what movie did we see? We're in, you know how they do, like, whatever theater you go to, they have the, like, the trailer for the movie theater itself, like, the brand. We go to a Cinemark, so the Cinemark ad was like the theater erupting for something. I'm like, yes. Don't. Yeah, what are
like
we
the
doing?
Like the Coca-Cola ad or like, whatever it was.
Like, yeah. This is real? Like, why are you like...
Like, the guy walks in with his soda and the crowd's like cheering and he's like, what did I miss?
And I'm like, what is this? Like, what's going on? Like, this is crazy. Like, I don't think by any means necessary you need to be quiet. Like, I'm 1,000,000% cool with clap, but like, those No Way Home videos are just... It's a bit sickening because it's like I've seen like people are throwing stuff, people are like screaming at the top, like that's just your ruining.
And that's also like the one-upsmanship of social media. Like, there was something very organic about the Endgame stuff. You know what I mean? Like that felt very communal and that felt very natural. Mm-hmm. Where I feel like everything after it is just people clout chasing, like trying to get that Endgame. Yeah, yep. Feeling. Mm-hmm. Like there are some genuinely amazing moments in Spider-Man in my home. I will not argue that. Like there are some, but like you said, the reactions are like insanity, like mm-hmm. to the point, like, you know, maybe it's just my personality, but like I don't react that way.
Yeah, I remember I saw No Way Home and like me and my friend were like grabbing it. Like that's the, like no sound. Like we were like, this is crazy. Like, but like, and like, you know, clapping, but like, not like, you remember that one No Way Home video where those guys were like standing off the ledge. Like, and I'm like, what? Like, this is crazy that this is just normal now. Like the straw that broke the camel's back was Black Adam, because you're telling me the movie itself doesn't, but the post-credit scene, like, is, you know, is the best part of your movie. Like, and I do, like, the post-credit scene is the best part of that movie, but like, that's a bad thing. That's not a good thing at all. That I personally don't think that's something to be proud of, because what are people going to forget about? The movie that you just worked hard to make. As ever bad as a movie is, it, you know how it's so difficult to make a movie, so it's just, you're just trying to recreate this thing that was organic. And it's just not real. You're just doing it because you feel like you need to do it. Like, those reactions from Black Adam for Henry Cavill, it did not need to be like that. Like, seeing some of the things, like, it's fake. You're just a content creator trying to, you know, get views at that point.
And you know what movie handled that the best? It was Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, a couple of those moments, if... you know, the crowd didn't understand the gravity of them, could have went really sideways, you know, in terms of, especially the end, mm-hmm. with kind of like that montage that plays of Chadwick, of like Shuri remembering her brother, like where it's just silence. Mm-hmm. And it's like those moments I was really worried about.
Yeah.
About how they would be taken in and absorbed by like the audience, but like luckily, and I think we attributed this like to Ryan Coogler at the time, like he crafted such a great film and such like a movie that meant a lot and mm-hmm. had a lot of feeling behind it, that like the crowd was locked in emotionally.
Yeah, it felt like the first part, like it felt like the audience was like at a funeral, like, you know, even down to like not playing the fanfare and just having like the, because we've seen the Chadwick, I think, I forgot what movie it was.
I think they retroactively added it to Black Panther.
Well, I think there's a movie that came out in I forget what movie came out in 2020 where it might have been Black Widow. I think that's what it was. Remember where they replaced the fanfare with Chadwick instead because he had just passed away. So I think it was Black Widow where they
swapped. And then they retroactively added it to Black Panther.
Yeah. But for this one, like the wherewithal to have no sound, and like that was like a moment of silence for the audience, and like you hear people sniffling, and like you hear it. Yeah, they got it. And like the funeral scene, it felt like we were actually at a funeral. Like, that's what it felt like. And then, like, the end with Letitia Wright just sitting on the beach, like, that felt like the memorial. Like, this is, like, the time to, like, again, no sound, just have him be him. And, like, we could celebrate everything that, you know, made him so incredible. Like, that's correct, for lack of a better term, because it's, like, it feels correct and organic. Like, it feels
and that's why it felt organic, and that's why people reacted the way, or didn't react mm-hmm. the way that they did, because it felt organic, whereas, like, these reactions to, you know, Spider-Man's a great example of, like, it's just, we get it. Like, it's cool. Like, it is cool. Like, it's a great moment, but, like, at the same time, like, it's not what happened with Endgame, where like Infinity War is another great example of like the reservation being like the proper reaction. Like the end, when everyone starts dusting away, like people aren't like beside themselves. They're not like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's
like,
silent.
It's eerily silent. So like, it feels like in the hands of whoever, like the proper directors and that know how to make those moments feel special, it'll elicit the proper response from an audience. And that's like, to your point about Black Adam, like it didn't elicit a proper response. Like it elicited, I guess in a way it did elicit the proper response, like the response that was supposed.
That's the whole sell of that movie. It was for Henry Cavill. That's the old, I don't think, I know that's the only reason though. That movie only exists for The Rock to get a superhero movie. And for Henry Cavill to get some fan service. And I love him. I, like, you know how I feel about Henry Cavill as Superman. Like, one of my favorite characters and, you know, one of what I think is one of the more under the radar performances as Superman. It's a lot more subtle. But if I'm to get, but then like the Black Adam movie itself, like what was the point of any of that? Like if that does, that movie doesn't feel whole. Like it feels a bit hollow when you look at it like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what No Way Home, the first half of No Way Home, struggles with, because like at that point you kind of feel like it's coming. It's just when it's coming, like when it's going to happen with the two of them. So it's like, why am I, what am I invested in right now in this beyond, you know, callbacks to other things?
And they, I mean, I think to their credit, to that movie's credit, it did a great job of immediately, maybe not immediately, maybe it took a little bit longer than I would have liked, but like establishing Goblin as a proper villain to Tom Holland instead of him just being Tobey Maguire's nemesis.
And I'll go even farther. That movie also turned into feeling like a film after that. Like, and that middle piece of like, it went from feeling like an anticipation for something into like, this is actually just a movie at this point, just like a movie, like, and then we can consume movies the way we can consume movies.
Cause they did, like I said, they did a great job of tethering that villain to our point of view character. Mm-hmm. Like, they made him feel, they made Goblin feel like a villain to Tom instead of just like this villain got ported over from like another thing, which that's, I think that's what I'm a little worried about with Kang, to be honest with you. Like, he's got to be Ant-Man's nemesis. Mm-hmm. He can't just be he can't be the universe's nemesis right now.
You know what? That's a really good point. And now you just maybe instilled a little bit more fear in me, because now the way I think about it is like, why is this an Ant-Man movie? Like, why was this the choice to be the Ant-Man movie? And I just think it was where the calendars fell and everything. And then I think Peyton Reed walked into the office and said, hey, like, have I not like at least made like solid films?
Because
like, I've made,
the only other time this has been done was in Guardians 1 with Thanos. But he wasn't the Guardian's nemesis.
No, he was...
Ronan was.
Thanos was in that movie for 4 minutes, maybe.
Thanos was... He was Ronan's nemesis. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't there as the Guardian's nemesis. He was there as, like, Thanos is here, and he's kind of pulling the strings of everything. Where in this, Kang has to be Ant-Man's nemesis, or the movie's not going to work. As great as he may be, and I think he's going to be great.
Yeah, you know what movie would have worked? I mean, this is also, you know, the theory that I'd held for a little bit that's now kind of dead, but back in like 2016, 17, I always had this theory that Hank Pym was going to, like, something was going to happen, you know, when they talked about the quantum stuff, that Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne were going to turn into, like, the 30, 40-year-old versions of themselves, and, like, they'd get new actors, like, new bigger actors to play them, and they'd be in universe. So, like, that's also the thing with Scott Lang himself. Like, how much do you have to pull from for Scott Lang for, you know, in terms of, like, these bigger villains that you can help hold a movie up with? Like, Kang is a great villain to hold a movie, but is he a great villain to hold up an Ant-Man movie? Or is he a great villain to hold up an Avengers movie? Like, it's almost like, what's your time being wasted with Ant-Man in terms but versus the other Avengers?
Yeah.
So, like, what would have been cooler for this movie is if they, you know, obviously I'm going crazy, but, like, if they do something like that where, like, Hank and Janet are now prime Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne, and, like, Hank's like, all right, Tony messed up in making Ultron, I'm going to do it right this time, and he doesn't do it right. Like, I feel like something like that might be even a little bit more interesting than, like, they're going to go, they're going to the quantum realm, well, again. Like, they've done it for two movies, they're going to do it again. And, like, it's just getting kind of tired almost of, like, they keep going back to this quantum realm again and again and again.
Yeah.
The quantum realm's not Wakanda. Like, that's not a well you can pull from, like, repeatedly that people are going to be excited for.
And this movie's basically doing the reverse of what the Avengers did with Loki. Like, Loki started out as Thor's nemesis, mm-hmm. and then very believably became the Avengers' nemesis by the end of it. And then you realize that, no, he was just kind of like a subordinate of Thanos. Like, he was, like, subordinating himself to Thanos. Like, this movie's doing the reverse. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to take an Avengers-level villain and contain him to Ant-Man? I don't know how you're doing that.
Yeah.
It'd be like if, you know, if they had done Ultron as, like, a Captain America villain.
Yeah.
Or, like, an Iron Man villain.
Right.
Like, it's just Iron Man going up against Ultron, and you're like, I don't know if I buy that.
Yeah.
Like, right. That seems a little odd. Like, yeah. So I think that may also be part of the disconnect people are having with this movie, is that, like, Kang feels too big of a threat for Ant-Man.
Yeah. And I mean, that also, you talk about the wave that we just talked about of how you consume, like, movie to movie now in Phase 4 beyond. Like, how do you pick and choose? So even going further with that, like, does Wakanda, like, what feels like Ant-Man 1 and 2 don't feel like Captain America 2 and 3. Those movies feel much, like, two of those feel like comedies versus two of those feel like, you know, spy to, like, war movies almost. Like, but how do you can't have the same villains for those movies. You know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like you could have the same villain. I think this is a situation where, like, they're trying to tell me, like, oh, you can have Kang as an Avengers villain, and you can have, like, you really have him as just an Ant-Man villain, right? Like, that doesn't feel correct.
No, it doesn't feel correct, and it feels like, I mean, at the end of this, it does feel like there's a lack of stakes to this movie. Going back to where I was like, well, that doesn't feel right. Like, how can there be? But now that I'm talking myself around to it, like, there does feel like a lack of stakes, because, you know, I mean, I guess they kind of give it away in the trailer. Like, Kang isn't going to lose.
Yeah, he's getting out of there. He's getting out. Like, this, you know what this movie is? This movie is
like an interlude.
This movie's like a trailer for Kang Dynasty almost.
Yeah.
It feels like a prequel one shot of Kang beating a version of Ant-Man just to get out.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, obviously, if it's any secret, there's no spoils behind this. This movie's just going to be, like, he does a heist. Like, this is exactly what that... He's going to do a heist with his daughter, to get Kang the... I'm assuming he's going to need... what's it called? I forget what it's called. He's going to need that orb thing to put in his time chair to get out. That's like... And I think that energy is going to get pulled from the... It's going to be the same energy that's in the Ten Rings and in the Bangles, so... Yeah, cool. You got Ant-Man to do it.
This is the biggest fear that a lot of people have with the MCU is, like, when are these movies going to start ending up just being trailers for the next thing?
Yeah, yep.
And that's entirely possible.
And that was the fear that started to happen by the start of Phase 2. Like, and I think Thor 2 was one of the bigger ones of, like, people were starting to get nervous of, like, uh-oh, like, because Iron Man 3 had came out and then Thor 2, and those movies aren't the best received, and that came out of an Avengers, like, Avengers 1, so... But then you hit your cruising altitude, and then we get Guardians of the Galaxy and Captain America Winter Soldier back to back. So, like, then you kind of hit, you know, your hits after that.
And Guardians 1 still has that perfect balance of here's Thanos. Mm-hmm. He's still out there. He's looking for the Infinity Stones, but also here's the self-contained thing about this group.
Here's Ronan. Like, this is Ronan. Like, Ronan has something personal to do. Like, he has... I don't feel like, what's the personal stake? Like, I feel like the best villain hero conflicts are a bit personal. Like, as much as I feel like we don't love the movie, like, Thor Love and Thunder, like, Gore to... I don't think it was handled well, but the concept makes sense. Like, Thor to Gore makes a lot of... Because, like, Gore's going around killing these gods, and Thor's a god. That's as simple as you can get. Like, immediate conflict. You go to... Give me Shang-Chi. It's father-son. Like, it's a father-son. Like,
Black Widow has it.
Black Widow's just like, all right, I killed this guy's daughter, and now it's coming back to haunt me, essentially. And that's basically what, like, the whole Black Widow program is to Natasha. It's like, I'm trying to forget about all these things, but I can't, like... As ever,
the sins of the past,
or the sins of the father with Shang-Chi, like, as ever, the execution might either be good or bad. Like, at least those, like, I don't know how much sense this makes in terms of, like, a hero to villain, like, connective tissue between
other each other. Than Kang just, like, holding over him, like, I can give you time back with
that's
your daughter.
Boring. That's boring to me. That's That's very Mustache Swirl, Justice League Unlimited, Avengers Assemble cartoon, like, villain of the week thing.
Yeah.
That's not getting ready for Phase 5 to launch off, like, what are supposed to be some of the biggest movies ever.
Whereas, man, it's weird that I've, like, talked myself out of this movie now. I talked myself out of it, but just, like...
You know what's funny? Remember a couple weeks... I think it was 2 weeks ago, I told you... Remember what I told you? I was like... I'm a little nervous for this, and you were like, "Don't be nervous." And I think I think you're starting to understand why we talked it out now. Yeah, I was starting to get a little bit more nervous and more nervous.
Like, maybe they should have just done the Thanos Guardians thing with this movie and had MODOK be the villain.
Yeah, and I think MODOK would probably be better against, because what is the thing?
Personal stakes.
It's Darren Cross that you're pulling your first villain back.
Like, and, yeah,
and like those movies are like the Ant-Man movies are funny. So like having this big floating head flying around like would
like you can yeah. easily have like the same type of story where like Cassie builds the quantum thing, they dive into the quantum realm, and like MODOK's there
and he's running things. Yeah.
And Scott Lang's like, "What the?
Yeah,
Darren Cross."
Right. For the last time, so we do that, and then he's just like, "I work for a bigger boss, but you're not going to find out until the post-credit scene, or in the middle of the movie." Just have a different and it doesn't need. It didn't even need to be Kang the Conqueror itself, or it could have been. And then maybe you start the first part, or the post-credit scene's the thing, and then maybe you start Kang Dynasty with like, "All right, MODOK's dead. Like, I think it's time to do this."
Yeah, I think I agree. Like, I think I've always thought that, to be honest. Like, why is Kang the villain? Like, he should just be, like, the Thanos kind of Guardians character.
Yeah, it takes a bit of the mystique around, like, you know, whenever we say these, like, Avengers-level threats, like, Jake Gyllenhaal, Mysterio, like, this is an Avengers-level threat, like...
And now he's just going to be punching with Ant-Man?
Yeah, they're just going to be punching for a bit.
They're not going to be friends, though, after this.
They might. Nathaniel Richards might be friends.
Or, man, I mean, look.
We could be wrong.
Maybe this movie will be over and Scott Lang is going to do something and he's going to be like the Silver Surfer, like heralding Galactus. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe he's going to be the one that alerts all the other Avengers to like what Kang is up to.
I mean, I guess we can launch into this. So, real quick, Ant-Man 1 is Scott Lang's in jail. Scott Lang, because we have to do this. Scott Lang's in jail. He gets out of jail. Hank Pym doesn't have a wife. Hope Van Dyne and him, they're estranged. Scott gets out of jail. Hank's like, "We need to take these pin particles from Darren Cross before he creates the Yellow Jacket suit." They do that. You find out that Hope and him aren't really estranged. They're working together to try to take down Cross. Hank needs Scott Lang to heist something because he's real good at heist. He learns the Ant-Man suit. He learns the Ant-Man powers. He learns
the way of Ant-Man.
Yeah, he learns the way of the Ant-Man. That's what they should call this movie. Ant-Man, the way of the Ant-Mans. They do that. They get the Pym particles away from Yellow Jacket. They punch up for a bit. Happy ending. Civil War, Ant-Man's there. That's it. He becomes Giant Man. I mean, that's the big thing for him, is he learns how to turn into Giant Man. Ant-Man and the Wasp, they realize that Janet Van Dyne's still alive. She's just in the quantum realm. Big thing from the end of the Ant-Man 1 is that Scott goes into the quantum realm, but he's able to get out. Hope turns into Wasp. What's the villain, the street-level villain in that movie?
Oh, the guy?
The guy, yeah, with the white
And people were like, "What's up with this guy?" Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing. Nothing. As bare bones as you can get for a villain. That happens. Ghost is there, so you find out that Bill Foster was working on some... He was working with... Well, that's played by Lawrence Fishburne. Was working with... working with Hank Pym before. Ghost is there. She had an experiment go wrong with her dad and, like, her parents died.
She's very sad.
Very sad. They punch up for a bit. That's it. That movie's just there for the post-credit scene to see them get snapped. That's it.
To make us relive trauma.
Relive trauma, right? But Scott gets trapped in the quantum realm.
Again.
That's not great. They did it 3 times. Keep going to the well, Peyton Reed, but...
And then he becomes a very emotionally reticent character in Avengers Endgame?
But possibly the best in that. So, I mean, as much as I guess people like to bag on the Russos for stuff.
They bring the best out of these characters.
Don't take the Gray Man the same way as you're going to take the Avengers Endgame. Like, one was a universe they'd built for years versus, like, the Gray Man is just a fun 90s-esque type of, you know, espionage movie. But yeah, Ant-Man's out. Avengers Endgame happens. He's important. He gets out. Tony reverse engineers the time travel tech from Scott being in there. The idea that he gets, you know, punch up for a bit. Thanos is done. Ant-Man's a celebrity now. By the time Ant-Man 3 comes out, Cassie's grown up. And yeah, she builds a thing into the quantum realm. I don't know why. That was a real dumb decision by her. I guess we're going to get it explained. And yeah, then Quantumania. All right, there's your summary.
He's done it.
All right, now we can go on to the what are these post credit scenes? That's the thing I wanted to talk about.
I don't know.
There's two. People are saying that the first one is nuts. Like it's crazy.
The Kang Dynasty
being born? Is it the Avengers being formed? Like or is it like the multiversal Avengers? So like you think we're gonna see anybody? Yeah, I like as crazy as it's. I do that. I think it's a possibility.
We're not doing the X-Men again. We're not doing it.
We are.
I'm not having it.
No, we are.
We will not have it.
We will not have it. The second one might be. I think the second one might be Nathaniel Richards comes back, and it's just like
one of these has to be Kang related.
Yeah, I think the first because is the third act of this movie just based on the trailers. I feel like that's just like the battle for him to beat like these infinite amount. I think Scott's gonna learn how to like replicate himself, so he's gonna have a whole bunch of versions of himself fight all these Kangs.
Oh my god!
He's gonna pull a Barry Allen situation with the Remnants.
Yeah.
Oh man, we launched down a rabbit hole before we hopped on. Maybe we do a Twitter poll of who came first, the Remnant or Savitar?
I'm not doing it.
I love how the Arrowverse handles time travel. You know how the Arrowverse handles time travel? It is what it is. That's literally how they handle it. They don't explain anything. They explain it once, and then if it's wrong, they said, it doesn't matter, because time travel. That's it. I love it.
Yeah, man, I don't know what these post credits. One is absolutely going to be like Kang being like, it's a real Kang Dynasty I've set up here. But he's going to be like, this is the Kang Dynasty. And it's going to go, bam, 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 and then it's going to cut to black.
No, not like this. Not like this.
It's going to say, Kang will return.
Kang will return to Kang Dynasty. That's not fun. I think the first one's gonna be like the. I mean, I just don't know who you pull. Like, I don't know who you can realistically get.
Do we cut back to the Shang-Chi post credit scene, linking those two movies, like linking those two things officially?
I mean, what movie comes after this?
Guardians.
Okay, so they're not gonna. I don't think they're gonna have anything. I mean, the Marvels would be the next thing because I think this is gonna have something to do with that.
Maybe
so. That was another thing about the Super Bowl. I think there's a reason we didn't get a Marvel's trailer in there too, because that would probably be a good time to debut. I think that they might have held it because something might happen in this movie that's going to influence the universe. But I think the second one I'm going to go hard stop. It's going to be Nathaniel Richards. Listen, if you're listening, get the kid that played the younger version of Nat Love in The Harder They Fall. Just have him be Nathaniel Richards because he's a young version of Jonathan Majors, and just have him come back and find Cassie and be like, we've worked together before. You might not realize it yet, but we need Kate Bishop. We need Elijah Bradley. Like, we need all these people. And then you can do the theme thing.
But like higher pitch?
Yeah, just a little higher.
Because it's Young Avengers?
Yeah. So that's going to be this. I'm going to call that's going to be the second one. It'll just be Nathaniel Richards. What's the first one? What do you do? It's got to be like the Avengers need to, or maybe Scott makes it out and he goes to like Falcon and he goes to Black Falcon. If I'm Black Falcon, does that make you Black Kid? Falcon and the Winter Soldier, underrated. But maybe he goes to Sam and he's just like,
I'd like to see Sam again.
Buddy, we need the we need the Avengers back. Like, we need the actual Avengers.
You're Captain America now?
Yeah. Oh, cool. Can you get some Avengers, maybe? What if he's like, where's Steve? And he's like, ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. I'd like to see Sam again. It's been a while.
And, like, he's the leader of the event, like by the all the rumors that are like he is the leader of the Avengers.
By all the rumors.
The rumors. The
he should be.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, like
he's Captain America.
And I mean,
for God's sake.
To pull, you know, continuity stuff like the Disney cruise thing, like where they shot all the
Actually, you know what I want? I want a montage of Scott going to different Avengers and them just being like, go away.
Yeah.
He goes to Doctor Strange and Doctor Strange is like, absolutely not.
Yeah, Doctor Strange is just like, what's a Kang? And then he just leaves.
Doctor Strange is like, nope. I don't want to hear it.
Did you say multiverse? I'm good. You see, this is my new girlfriend, Clea.
He's like, absolutely.
You're Charlize Theron from Fast X.
Absolutely not.
I can't believe Charlize Theron. I mean, I can believe it. If she did Fast X, she can do a Marvel movie.
That's what I want. I just want Scott going to different Avengers and them just be like, no.
Thor goes to Thor. Thor's like, I'm good. This is my new adoptive daughter.
Thor's just drinking.
Yeah.
He goes, I don't know, who else could he go to? Spider-Man?
Goes to Spider-Man.
Who are you?
Wait, I knew a guy named Spider-Man, but who are you?
You're not his friend.
You're not. What other? Who else is out there? Goes to Captain Marvel. Why am I in this room in New Jersey?
He's got to go to Wong.
Oh
right?
My God! Maybe Wong's in the post-credit scene.
I hope so. Best movie ever, actually.
Come on. He is the best character from Phase 4. Actually, we actually lied to you guys. It's just him specifically.
No, I think that'd be cool if he went to see Sam. That would make sense.
And it's just like...
Because he has, like, an affinity for, like, Captain America. Like, him and Sam are already, like, kind of friends.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Sam's the main reason why he even is an Avenger, so...
Because he lost that fight that one time.
He did lose that fight that one time. just to talk about those other... I think I'm much higher on Ant-Man 1 than I was before. It feels... I mean, it's wild, but it feels much more real. Because, I guess, comparatively to, like, seeing the trailers for this and the reactions to this and then watching, you know, Ant-Man and the Wasp, like, Ant-Man 1 feels so much more, like, ground level and, like, much more practical than those other two movies, and I think I appreciated that a little bit more. The whole scale thing, because that's the first interaction with that, I think is pretty cool, so.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's actually a pretty solid MCU film.
Yeah, I like the first Ant-Man movie quite a bit.
But the only thing, the post-credit piece is, like, if this, I'm just taking what people are saying, like, this thing is apparently wild. Like, the first one is apparently, like, nuts.
I feel like I've heard that before, and then I see them, and I'm like, meh.
That's just Hercules. You're the guy from Ted Lasso. This isn't crazy.
I feel like people have done that before, though.
What if he said, not you, father, you, father? Aw, man.
What if it's just Hercules again in the post-credit scene?
They just accidentally run the same post-credit. They just do the Doctor Strange trailer in every post-credit scene.
I hope... No, don't. Marvel, if you're listening, don't. Don't you ever dare put a movie trailer at the end of your movie ever again. Do not do that. That was the dumbest post-credit, quote-unquote, post-credit scene I've ever seen. I was like, is this just the Doctor Strange trailer?
And it was just the Doctor Strange trailer.
I was like, what? Huh?
You got that. I mean... I can't think of anything else. I just feel like it might just be a version of the Avengers, maybe.
Maybe. That makes sense.
The Fantastic Four.
Nope. I'm not doing this.
Absolutely not.
We're not doing this. It's John Krasinski.
It is John Krasinski.
The biggest threat to the
But it's just the Fantastic Three, because he's dead. And then they just pull the line from Wakanda Forever, I've come for retribution! And just Sue going crazy.
It's just a cold open pan to the aftermath of the Illuminati fight, and it's just them just scattered across the floor.
Mordo's still alive, right?
Yeah.
That's so funny to me. it's so funny that he's the only
Doctor one. Doctor Strange has left him in that little, like,
but you know what's crevice. Even funnier? That, like, he just can't get out. So he's just in there.
Forever?
And, yeah, that he's trapped in there.
Because everyone else is dead.
And then, like, there's, like, an SNL-style skit, like, where, like a mini stepladder gets accidentally dropped down in there. And he's just like, I will have my revenge on Doctor Strange.
Baron Mordo will return.
They already did that. They can't do it again.
In Ant-Man 4.
Oh, maybe that's Ant-Man's bag. They just put villains that have no business being Ant-Man villains in there.
They did do that after the first one.
Dr. Manhattan wins.
Because Ghost is an Iron Man villain.
Ghost is an Iron Man villain, A, and Ghost just had no issue just messing up Scott that whole movie.
Ultron will return.
That's another thing, too. And not to keep, you know, beating the drum, but, like, Scott Lang's a bit, for lack of a better term, inept. Like, and
still,
and that, and I think that was my biggest issue with Ant-Man 2. And, like, by far, my biggest issue was, like, how much he doesn't feel like, it's not even imposter syndrome. Like, he genuinely doesn't feel capable. Whereas, like, one, like, he felt capable. Like, he was doing the heist things, but, like, he could fight. He felt
capable in Civil War.
And, right, he felt capable in, but, like, Ant-Man 2, he just feels like a bumbling idiot
the whole time. He also felt capable in Endgame.
Right, like, I don't
like know. Like, when he explained, like, was explaining the science of everything, I'm like, wait a minute, this guy gets it.
What I think it was more of, like, they were trying to prop Hope up so much, where, like, you forgot about Paul Rudd so much, and you were like, all right, I think it was, like, a really bad take on, like, you know how you're supposed to beat the crap out of your hero in the second movie? Like, not like that, like, not making him, like, an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, actually physically beat the crap out of him.
Yeah.
I think that's gonna do it.
Yeah, that was a good discussion.
Yeah, I felt like that was bad. I still gave the really crappy summary of everything.
I wasn't expecting that discussion to go where it did, but yeah. now I'm.
We did it in another episode too, where we had a discussion about something instead of the thing.
Yeah,
and I think that some of these discussions are really needed because
it's made me more. It's made me more interested in what we're gonna see on Thursday.
Yeah,
I'm like, what is this?
What is that? That was me when that scene in Miss Marvel happened. What is that?
Yeah, that's it. We're done.
It's over. That's the best post-credit scene in MCU history. Remember when people were like moaning and groaning in the theater? What do you mean we didn't get a universe-altering post-credit scene?
I liked it.
Bruce Campbell is universe-altering.
Yeah, that was great. Pizza Papa.
Pizza Papa always gets paid. That movie's... See? Just cut the Illuminati stuff out and that movie's awesome.
Dreamwalking, you hypocrite. Put that on a t-shirt.
Come on! I don't even want to know. Stephen Strange possessing a dead body. Man.
Do you mind? You been to Christine's wedding? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. No, I didn't. God, that movie's great. When's the Doctor Strange multiverse? I almost said Metropolis of Madness.
Metropolis of Madness.
What's the Multiverse of Madness retrospective?
Yeah, too soon? Yeah, imagine having a retrospective for a movie that came out less than a year ago.
Oh, man. What am I doing?
What's your favorite romantic movie?
Oh, 10 Things I Hate About You?
Yeah. Yep, that's good. That's real good. That's good. Go ahead. Talk about it for a
little bit. It's so good. What are you kidding?
I know it's good. Tell the people why it's good.
Julie Stiles.
The cast is great. That's a really good cast. The
cast is incredible. Julie Stiles at peak Julie Stiles-ness. Mm-hmm. Heath Ledger obviously was like, this is like, here he is.
Yeah. Like, imagine if they casted him as a villain in something.
Imagine him being the Joker in a Batman movie.
That would be so stupid.
I hope that never happens. The movie's great. I mean, it's obviously, it's lifted from... Obviously, it's based on a Shakespeare play. It's based on Taming of the Shrew, which is great. That's right on my, that's in my bag already. And it's just a brilliant rom-com take on the rom-com where like the desirable girl isn't like the girl next door. Mm-hmm. It's the surly one is like the desirable, and like you get these two characters that like believably fall for each other, and then obviously it's a rom-com, so there's like hijinks involved, and they split apart, and then she does obviously the big speech, the 10 things I hate about you, and it's really good. And that movie's just great. I love it. It's funny, it's touching, it still holds up. Like, I feel like a lot of like those rom-coms from like the 2000s, there's elements of it where you're like, ugh, you know what I mean?
Right.
But that movie still holds up. It's sweet. It's endearing. And it's just two actors at like the beginnings of like their careers. And you're like, oh, these two were great. Like, they're incredible. So yeah, 10 Things I Hate About You is my favorite romantic movie.
That's good. So let me tell you about episode 3 of The Last of Us. I'm kidding.
Hey, it's not.
I mean,
terrible.
It's not
a terrible answer.
Terrible is not a. It's an understatement. It's the before trilogy. I think is the. It's. I don't even. I'll even go as far to say it's like, it's the greatest romance you can have ever. Period. Like, put the stake in the. Put the stake in the moon. We're claiming it. That movie or those movies have so much. They have so much real flow to them, like Richard Linklater's dialogue, and then, you know, subsequently, which turned into Linklater, and then Ethan Hawke on top of that. the dialogue is, it's so, and I forget what her name is. I know her last name is Delpy, but the three of them, their dialogue is just incredible. It feels real. It's the evolution of love, I think, is what's so incredible. And it's so realistic that, you know, love isn't this like black and white thing. It's not something that's supposed to be like, you know, guy falls in love with the girl, girl doesn't see him, or vice versa. And like, you hit the point you need to hit. Like, love is life also. So it's like the circumstance of life has, you know, a heavy influence in that. And, you know, their chemistry is just, their chemistry is infinite. Like, the way they interact with each other, it feels so realistic and feels so real. There's a lot of existentialism in those movies too, instead of like, you know, the normal, like, oh, the universe revolves around just our love. It's like, yeah, it's the other way around almost, where like the existentialism of life revolves around the love. So if you look at it from that perspective, it's so real. It's so raw. And those movies are just, they're really well made movies. They're incredibly acted, but, it's the philosophical nature of love, I think, is what's the best part about those. So really good. Great. Really good. Very somebody good. Buy me the box set from the Criterion Collection for my birthday.
boom,
you looking for this? That's how most love stories are anyway. Boom, you looking for this?
Also, You've Got Mail.
Yeah,
great romantic movie.
Maybe we just do the Tom Hanks romantic movies and we go like that. Sleepless in Seattle, Road to Perdition, because his love for the game of crime.
Toy Story. Woody and Bo Peep.
Yeah, man, Tom Hanks has got a catalog on him. The Post, because he loved The Post. I'm kidding.
Captain Phillips,
because he loved the water.
He loved that boat.
Yeah, and he had that dog in him.
Castaway.
Because he loved Wilson.
He loved Wilson. Wilson!
What are we doing our Tom Hanks versus Denzel episode?
At some point.
that episode's going to break the internet.
I can't wait.
Because then you guys are also going to be like, wait a minute. They really are the antithesis of each other from like the 80s to like the 2000s.
Oh, man. Forrest Gump?
Mm-hmm.
Toxic romance?
Toxic
romance?
She's the worst. Oh, my God. Jenny's one of the worst people that ever lived.
The Green Mile? Kidding.
Come on, man.
Saving Private Ryan.
He loved war. He loved Ryan.
Oh, man. All right. Let's get out of here. Yeah. We got to go, man.
Yeah, we got to go, man.
Yeah.
That was like the first of Tom Hanks, but she hasn't seen The Last of Us. Didn't work as well, but we still got it in. That's my new, we got to go, man. They better get Jeffrey Wright for season two. If they don't, like, go Merle Dandridge route, just get the actor.
Yeah, absolutely. Ah, oh, man. Follow us on Twitter.
Yeah.
@INF_pod.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow us on Instagram.
@ProjectInfinitePod.
Follow us on Facebook. Listen to all the episodes.
All of them. Download the episodes, you hypocrites. We listen to your podcast. Well, download the episodes.
Leave us a review.
Mm-hmm.
One of these days, we'll get on another social media platform.
Sure. TikTok?
We could do a TikTok.
Unless TikTok gets shut down.
No. Nope. Well, I will not have it.
I personally will keep TikTok alive just so we can be on. Yeah, we'll do a TikTok, and I'll show my pretty mug on there. I won't subject you to that.
We'll do a floss.
Yeah. And then one day, the Avengers Endgame of this is hitting YouTube.
Yeah.
Once that day happens, the universes are going to start colliding. it's going to be like Secret Wars all over again.
Then we can really call ourselves an infinite, ever-expanding multiverse.
Because you could get shared an infinite amount of times.
Yeah, infinite amount of times. That's everything.
I thought you were going to do the X-Men theme. That was great.
Yeah, so that's it. We'll see you. Are we going to do a Ant-Man thing?
Yeah, we'll do like a non-spoiler after we see it, and then we'll do a spoiler after that.
All right, cool. We'll do that then. We'll see you later this week then. So yeah. For me, from the...
Real, you gotta be... What did he say in the Secret Invasion? You gotta be real careful here.
Do I?
Oh, I was thinking about The Last of Us. That's why I was thinking you had to be careful.
Man.
We didn't really talk about much in terms of...
I gotta pick an Ant-Man character, right?
Or you can go from the trailers. Because that was pretty big.
Oh, man. The freaking...
can't be Indiana Jones? Still a Nazi, are you?
That was pretty good. I love Harrison Ford. I was going to say the...
Put the hat over his head and punched him in the face. Big tip. Prime Indy.
I was going to say the Jason Momoa's character from the Fast and Furious of the podcast.
Where's his accent? Isn't he supposed to be Brazilian?
He's just Jason Momoa, man.
I love that cell. Like, it's going to the Jamie Foxx school of just being yourself in the character that's already established.
Dom Toretto. What does he say to him in the trailer?
I forget, man.
That's the hardest thing about family. Is you gotta choose the one you lose, or whatever he says. It's so melodramatic.
It's gonna be Tyrese, right? Ejectosito, cuz! Yeah, let's actually only talk about that one.
And Dom's gonna be like,
eh. Yeah. Ludacris? Ah, he was good at hacking, no.
Oh, what if they bring Ja Rule back? In this one.
Are you ready?
Is that like the like Avenger, like Multiverse of Madness, like Illuminati moment when Ja Rule returns to Fast and Furious?
I don't even want to know.
The biggest threat to the Fast and Furious universe is Ja Rule.
He said it isn't even Jason Momoa. We found that it's Ja Rule.
All right, guys, we'll see you later this week.
Remember to endure and survive.
Endure and survive. When you're lost in the darkness looking for the light. The Last of Us.
The Last of Us spoken word. They should do a spoken word of The Last
they
of
did
Us.
A, do the musical, you cowards.
Do the musical. Do the. What a great thing that Neil Druckmann did, like, to get the tension away because of how intense you need to shoot.
Yeah.
So.
All right. We'll see you later this week for a Quantumania review. Not as well a review. Till then, goodbye.
Peace.